welcome to Banter and Such. I'm Brando.
And I'm Owen.
And today is our final episode!
It's the final episode! And for our final episode, we decided it's going to be a bro episode!
Dude, it's us.
It's just you and me.
This is how we started this
you
dang thing.
Me,
this
baby.
Is how we ended this dang thing. All right, let's get into some BS.
For one last time. So today, you heard us right, it is the final episode.
Not just the final episode, this is episode 100.
And it is episode 100 of Banter and Such.
And 100 episodes!
Yeah, Brando, I can't believe we made it this far without killing each other. Or getting canceled, to be honest.
Honestly, yes. The release, we get to just say whatever we want into
yeah,
the microphone.
Hey, look.
This has been like a therapy session.
We're just going to talk about the wheels and woes of owning a podcast studio and running our own podcast as well.
So before we started the show, I said we'll do the movie stuff first, but I kind of want to do the movie stuff second now. Now that we started talking.
All right. Before we get in today's topic, we want to give you a heads up on some Helios Network stuff.
Yes. This is our final episode. Yes. Today is the day of the Helios Network. Other shows that were part of our network, like Wasted Truth and Trouble HQ and Master and Debaters. Of course,
Tabletop
is continuing.
Yes.
Though, so they're good to go. But the others are finished their final episodes too. And this, finally, we've come to ours. I wanted to get us to episode 100.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I know we did a huge break in August. Just my life has just completely turned upside down in a good way. Like new job, girlfriend, football started, and that has become a big thing in all our lives now. Yours too, Brando. We are fantasy football guys now.
Yeah, apparently.
And we love it. So it's just, you know, just a lot of stuff. So we took a break in August, and I'll be honest, I was fully prepared just to that be our last episode, and Brando's like, hey, we got three more episodes. to get to 100.
Let's ride this to triple digits.
Hey! And, you know, also Spooktober, and I was like, I can't.
Yeah.
And I honestly, I'm really glad you convinced me to do that, because the two intros that I wrote and performed for our Spooktober episodes were fantastic.
They were good.
The clown
so
one,
good.
I have gotten so many compliments on.
Well, because that's the best one you've ever written,
I appreciate that.
Because you did that last year, and I think the year before also.
I've done intros. You've done a couple intros for Spooktober
as well.
That's
right. I did a couple too, yeah.
But that one was fun.
Your clown one was the best.
The clown one, it took me like 10 tries to get into it, because I originally did it with like my own voice. Yeah. And then I tried like deepening it and getting a little bit weirder, and then eventually I was like, fuck it. I'm just going to channel my inner Mark Hamill.
There we go.
And just try to become the clown prince of crime himself.
So voice actors, that's what we need to do after this.
Yeah.
I'm putting the podcast on my resume to get the voice acting job.
Yeah.
Invincible, call me.
Yeah, Ross Marquand.
Call me. Robert Kirkman. Dude, I used to live not far from Robert Kirkman, who wrote
The
Invincible comics. Yeah.
That's crazy. Anyways.
Yeah. So we started this show back in the day.
Oh my gosh.
This came out of Hammered and Helios, our D&D podcast.
So Brando hit me up during quarantine of 2020, and Brando and I had known each other. We knew we wanted to play D&D together, but Brando was in another group. And during that time, Brando was just like, he's like, hey, let's play D&D now. And we got the group together.
Yeah, I was like, someone has to like just like boss someone around when it comes to D&D. Someone's got to go, we're doing this right
now. I was always down.
But you know how it is.
Yeah.
With getting people together. And I just sent you that text. I was like, Owen, we're doing this.
We're doing D&D. I was like, okay.
And I knew a couple guys and you had some guys. And we got together and we started playing. And it was so much fun.
It was so much
fun. That
was
my first time playing with you ever.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I played before. You've obviously played a lot.
Yes, I've been a dungeon master for almost 20 years now.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't know it was that long.
Yeah, I think it's like 18 and a half right now, 19 almost.
I've been playing for maybe 11 or 12 years.
No way.
Yeah.
How do you still not know how to make attack rolls if you've been playing D&D for this long?
I don't need to know that stuff. You just need to get into
Did
your
you
character.
See in the D&D chat group on Instagram what I sent today?
No, I haven't seen today's. No.
What did you say? It was like a meme of, it's like, you know, it's a player's like 43rd session and he still doesn't know that he has to roll a d20 for attack. And it's I forgot what it was.
I know,
but it's
that. Somewhat, yeah. I honestly don't play D&D. I play like amateur theater.
Yeah, that's also true.
This is my acting club.
Yeah, so we started Hammered in Helios with Garrett, Mike, and Dean.
Yeah.
And then you and me, obviously. And that was the kind of entrance into the Helios network. And that's where we got the name.
Having a blast.
Because the world, my D&D world, is named Helios.
And just so anyone who doesn't know, Owen has made this custom D&D world. Yeah. It's original and it's great. And we played all of our stuff in there.
Yeah.
But we played that, and I feel like everyone who plays D&D has at one point, if you've played more than three sessions together, somebody has said, we should do a podcast. Like, I feel like
probably
that's every D&D group says that.
Yeah, and so we did. I mean, we launched it, and we launched it halfway through.
That's the thing. We actually did it.
Yeah, we did it.
We did
We fucking did it.
Yeah.
And so we launched it like mid-campaign, and I way overcommitted myself. I didn't realize how much editing took into, you know, we played for 4 to 6 hours and trying to edit down to hour and a half.
Crazy.
Even less sometimes.
You cut out all my best jokes.
I still do on Banner and such.
Even Banner. That's the only editing we do. It's just to cut out my funniest jokes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to tell one right now?
Yeah. So, you know what? The show would have been successful if I was allowed to be funny.
Brando, I hate to break it to you. You're not funny.
Hey, this is the best. This is the best I can do.
Yeah. Hey, but yeah, so just overcommitted. I had to bring that to an end, but I bought all the equipment that we used for the Helios Network.
Straight up built a studio.
And built a studio in my house, learned all that stuff. And then Brando, you approached me and was like, hey, like, let's make this a thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And then you and I created the Helios Network together.
Well, it came from us playing D&D and, like, getting off topic.
Yes. Because like every single episode, you would always be like, someone would make a joke or a reference to a movie.
Constantly making movie references.
And you'd be like, hey, we should review that movie.
I kept saying, I was like, oh, that's such a great movie. We should do a podcast about that movie. Mm-hmm. And I kept doing that. And then finally you were like, you really want to?
Yeah.
And I was like, seriously?
Let's do it.
And thus Banter and Such.
Banter and Such. We went back and forth. Like, I wish I could remember our original names for Banter and Such. Floating like five or six different names.
Now that you say that, yeah.
Yeah, and I can't remember what they were, but I wish I wrote those down. But yeah. And then Banter and Such launched in July of 2021.
21.
Yeah, so we're a little over 2 years old.
Wow. Wow, man. And we went, I think, let's see, 100 episodes in 2.5 years. It seems like it would be more than that, though, because we were going regularly.
Yeah, but you also have to remember, you know, we did a lot of bonus banter episodes. There's a lot of breaks that we took as well. You know, it was like, hey, we're going to take off the month of August or July or like December to in like half of January and things like that, just so we all had time. Well, you had time with your family to like vacation and whatnot.
Well, it's pretty awesome because we've done the show, and I remember – it did not start as a talking about movie podcast. We were like, let's talk about the things we're interested in.
Yes.
And it just happened to be everything we were interested in was like movies. Well, and we've had we've had a handful of non-movie episodes.
So, you know, we did a Dungeons & Dragons episode with Kenley.
The game.
That was a lot of fun.
Oh, Kenley.
Our fourth episode. Halo, the LAN party one, that was like our pilot, was you and I talking Halo.
That's right.
Yeah, we sat down without recording and was like, just started talking about Halo and LAN parties and all that stuff. And that was like, we got something here.
And for some reason, we listened to it and we're like, this is good.
Yeah, this is good.
Let's do this.
man, I'm trying to think. And then, this was also the height of...
We did an Area 51 episode.
Area 51.
Just talking about like aliens and UFOs and stuff. Yeah.
Pretty much everything else is like a TV or a movie.
Yeah, I think that's almost all. Yeah, I mean... I'm trying to think if we ever did comic books or anything, but that's even so like nerd culture related, you know?
Yeah. So
it just happened to be podcasts. Like every time we get together, we're like, well, what do you want to talk about?
And I mean, this
like,
was the height of Disney just releasing so much content too. I mean, we basically were almost an MCU podcast for a bit.
Yeah.
Because there was just so much coming out.
We've been listed in like a top top 50 list or top 100 list for MCU podcasts or something like that, or I've gotten emails about it before.
Oh, serious?
Yeah, but I don't think that matters.
I don't think. Yeah, it's probably just people trying to get money from us.
Yeah, I mean, this is our last episode, yeah. So obviously it doesn't matter. No, it doesn't but matter. That was the goal. I mean, so one of the things. I mean, I feel like everybody is like that. Like you have that idea of like, hey, let's do this thing and let's see if we can get some traction and honestly make some money with it. You know, just to say like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we could quit our jobs and do this? So, of course, with us doing this, that was one of our goals.
Yeah.
And we never quite got there, although we got close.
We got close, like, yeah.
We got some sponsorships and, mm-hmm. We did that. Oh, you know, one of my favorite things we ever did was the Wasted Truth live show.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
At Lakeside
that
Lounge.
That was a fun one.
That was so much fun. And I think you hated it because you were like the tech guy of it. So you were trying to like run sound for a live event and it wasn't working.
No.
You made it work.
Yeah, I got as close as I possibly could.
But for me, I just got to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And we packed that place.
Yeah,
dude.
That was a lot of fun.
And the Wasted Truth girls I think they felt like celebrities.
Dude, and whenever I wear one of the Wasted Truth shirts, I still get people like, hey, can I take a picture of that shirt? Where it says on the back, if you don't tip 20%, your mom's a hoe. Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of the coolest things was I've met people through the show who knew my voice. And they're like, oh, so that's what Brando looks like.
You know, he's so sexy.
Yeah, ooh. They always said that. Yeah. Always. It was strange.
Immediately followed by that.
Yeah, yeah. But I wasn't surprised.
Yeah, with me, it was like, oh, I didn't realize you were so bald.
Yeah, oh, that's Owen, huh?
Yeah, he's so bald.
for those people who don't know, that's the thing. I'm so glad I'm not bald. Because we have like similar glasses.
Yep.
We both have beards, like thick, full, dark hair beards. And if I was bald, then I would just be like the fat Owen. And that's why I'm glad.
Yeah.
We never did a logo like that with our faces because they're like, you put our glasses on our beards.
Yeah, the 8-bit characters for ours, which is always cool. So,
man, you know what? I would encourage everyone to check out our YouTube channel because I created little animated loops. That goes along with our episodes for several episodes.
Yeah.
And then I got sick of it because it took so much work to create those and like not a lot of people were looking and watching. So
ultimately what it comes down to is it's not like our content was bad. None of our podcasts were bad. I mean, all of them were absolutely hilarious and funny and just entertaining, you know.
I think it was good. It's hard to evaluate your own stuff, obviously. Yes. But I do think that our show has been good. I think you got us up to a technical level that was more than proficient.
Yeah.
I think we sound well. And I think our content was interesting and funny at times, sometimes really funny.
Oh my gosh, yeah. But, me puking on air.
But we and you know what? And I don't know if you've ever said this on air before, but we were growing every month for like the first year, and we were on track. We were headed exactly how we want to do. Things were looking great. And then finally, we just shot up, skyrocketed up,
yeah.
To like multiple times any downloads we'd ever had before.
Yeah, we were doing like 10 times the amount of downloads.
Yeah.
And we skyrocketed into almost like 10,000 downloads.
Yeah.
Like in a month.
Yeah, and which was a lot for us. That's a great start.
Number.
That's a great start. And we found out we were on some Apple list on iTunes or something.
Yeah.
I don't know how we got on there. And so that was pretty exciting. Not the most exciting time, but that was pretty exciting because it was like, here it is.
Yeah.
It's taken off. Let's keep going. Let's just keep making good stuff. And then immediately after that, it plummeted lower. The downloads plummeted lower than they've ever been. And we never found out why.
No.
Something happened with Buzzsprout. And they were not good to us.
Nope.
And I'm naming them and shaming
100%.
Them. They were not nice to us. They were very rude and very difficult with us. But they weren't uploading our show to
everywhere. They said they were going to do.
Yeah. And the number one was Amazon. And number one listeners was Amazon. I know most of you guys were listening on Amazon. And it just plummeted, and we never were able to recover from that. And that's such a fragile thing.
It sucks.
You know what I mean?
You know,
to build a crowd. You know, and I'm not complaining about it. I'm just telling the story. Like, this is how it went down. And you know, and we're like, you know, what can you do? You know,
we'll just build it back up.
Yeah, you make a good stuff and you put it out there and it goes the way it goes, you know?
Yeah. And so, you know, and all the other podcasts on the network are doing great. And so, you know, it's just, it ultimately came down to, just, I just don't have the time to do this anymore. Yeah. And the studio's in my house and letting people over into
that
my house.
That was always a temporary thing.
Yeah, it was meant to be.
It's in your house. Yeah. And we did that for like almost 2.5 years.
Yes.
I'm surprised you let us do that for that long.
Well, you know.
You even installed like a keypad on the door. Yeah, and so we had other people coming in recording mm-hmm. the shows and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you were more than gracious to let us do the studio in your house. So, and I knew that. I already knew that in my mind. I was like, as soon as Owen says he doesn't want to do this in his house anymore, we either have to be successful enough to where we can rent a studio, or that's as far as we can go. And
2.5 years, man.
And that's fair. I think that's totally fair. You're like, hey, I think we need it. And I'm like, okay, I get it. Yeah. I get, because honestly, I don't want all these assholes in my house.
Unhinged Brando. Here it is. Telling the truth.
It's the last episode.
But, you know, I don't see this as a failure for us. I mean, like, Lexi and Spencer, when they're on the last two episodes, they said it like, it was absolutely amazing to give people an opportunity to try something that they never would have been able to.
Yeah.
And especially with us, like, I was talking, I forgot with who, about these skills that I learned from podcasting and listening to myself, because I've listened to every single episode of Banter and Such multiple times.
Yeah.
And it's because I knew the only way that we could get better is... And it's hard to do that. It is hard to sit there and listen to yourself.
And evaluate and criticize yourself, yeah.
And so, like, I know, like, my voice has changed in 2.5 years. Like, because I was listening to myself and be like, I need to be a little bit more articulate.
There we go.
Yeah. Point proven, bitch. No, I need to be a little more articulate. I need to, like, not say, I know I say a lot or so, but, like, I've gotten a lot better about it. I've deepened my voice a little bit just because it registers better on a microphone. Like, learning like those type of things is skills that I've been able to bring into my actual like job in life.
Yeah.
You know, like
yeah.
I've always enjoyed public speaking, but I feel like I'm better now. Like I'm really good at
presenting and communicating,
disseminating information.
Yeah. 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 And here's the thing too, man. Our culture is so weird about like failure.
Yeah.
And people are so afraid of failure. And you see this in the dating world. Like so many men are afraid to talk to women because of rejection, right? And failure. And it's like, we see this all over. That's just one example. But, and I feel like that, there we go.
Nope. Oh,
come on, do it. Oh, yeah. We see this in the creative world too, right? Mm-hmm. In the business world and whatever. Like, you didn't even push that.
Yeah.
Oh, that was weird.
That's weird.
Nah, that's right. The show's over. But like,
well, goodbye.
But like, so many people are afraid to try something because they're afraid of failure. And I just, if there's one thing that anyone ever gets from us, I don't know, who knows, but like,
oh my gosh,
that is weird. That's odd.
I'm gonna click over. All right, but that shouldn't happen again.
Like, go for it. Like, and that's what, like you said, like, man, I'm not, I don't feel bad about this. Like, I don't feel bad either. We went for it.
Yeah,
we tried something, but why not? Let's all try things. Let's try more.
Learn
let's,
new skill sets. I never knew I would figure. I never thought I would know how to like. EQ a microphone.
Yeah.
Or like editing, like all this stuff and like figuring out these new skills that now like I'm intrigued. And if I end up getting out of sales, like I have a skill set that I can go to like a typical 9-to-5 job now and whatnot.
Yeah.
So.
And plus like empowering other people to be a part of the creative process.
That's been my favorite part.
Yes. That just meeting other people who are interesting. And then we became friends with all these people.
Yeah.
I mean, we're now playing D&D with Puck and Spencer and Alex, you know, every week we're playing we see each other like twice a week at least. And I know a lot of us even more. And it's just like, we're making friends. Well, Lexi was on that episode and it's like, we're tearing up, man.
Yeah.
Cause I met her on the show.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I met a lot of these people.
I met
on the
her
show.
With the purpose of her being on Banter and Such.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, I got introduced to her, and they're like, this could be a great guest. I was like, cool. So, like, we talked. Now Lexi's one of my closest friends.
I feel like I'm friends with most of our guests.
Yeah.
And all of our guests have been people I've enjoyed spending time with.
And to, like, everybody and that has been a part of the Helios Network or not, like, I highly suggest go back. And when I told people, I said this in every single one of our interviews when people were like, hey, I wanted to start a podcast on the network. I'd be like, go back and listen to the first couple episodes of Banter and Such.
Not good.
Or Waste of Truth, or Master and Debaters, or Trouble HQ. Like, you know, any of the podcasts that have been on our network. And you can listen to their first couple episodes and then listen to, like, their latest episodes.
Yeah.
And it's drastically different. Everyone made such amazing improvements. Like, like, confound, like, just absolutely, like, such a difference. And I mean, like, the best movies of all time between you and me, which is our first episode. It was like it. I refuse to listen to it.
I still haven't.
We don't talk with passion. Yeah. We just kind of sit there and like, you know, hey, yeah. So this is like
we just talk.
You just talk where it's like, yeah, no, it's you learning because it's not video. We have to convey all our emotions through our voice.
Yeah,
and so it's like stuff like that. I'm like, man, it's just so cool. So everybody that's been on the Helios Network, like, you all have done a great thing.
Yeah,
you went for it. You put our trust in both. Brando and I, excuse me, and I love you all for doing that, and just seeing the growth that you guys had from episode one to, I mean, what is it? Waste of Truth got in the 50s or 60s,
yeah.
And Waste so did Master Vader's, like, yeah, it's insane.
And I just, you know, I hope that all of us who've been in the Helios Network, all of us who've been guests, all of us who've listened, just like, man, just let yourself be not perfect,
yeah.
and try things, and because you never know what's going to stick and what's really going to build momentum and take off. And,
yeah.
And even if it doesn't, like, even with banter and such, it's like, hey, is this taking off into some huge megastar? We're like not Joe Rogan or whatever. But even then, it's still like the stuff, the experiences you have along the way, the friends you make along the way, it's a cliche for a reason because the journey itself is worth it and has been so beautiful and so fun. And the fact that there are people who listen to us, the fact that we've had listeners, we've had people who've messaged us on social media, who've emailed us, who've just to show like love and appreciation, be like, dude, I love you guys, that sort of thing. You guys are so funny. I love this episode. That kind of stuff is so cool. It's like, let's just do more of that in life, you know,
in
whatever form it comes. So
I'm all for it.
So this is our last episode.
This is our last episode. And just like any great writer will say, the best way to end something is the way it started.
Yeah.
It's a kind of mirror.
There we go.
Yeah. I'm so good at articulating.
We did.
Hey, look, I said it right. Oh, my gosh.
You did.
But we are going to now give you 3 years worth of podcast material now.
Yeah, if it's our last episode, we're like, let's just talk about everything we would ever talk about ever. Yeah.
But our first episode was titled The Best Movies of All Time.
Yeah.
And we are going to go through that once again by genre.
Yeah.
Which is something that we had talked about doing, like, hey, let's do a series where it's like, hey, like, you know, we've always done it where it's like the Spooktober movies, like, hey, let's do clowns or ghosts or hauntings and things like that. So today, now that we're done talking about Helios Network stuff, we are going to talk about the best movies of all time.
Yes.
In each genre.
We have 12 genres of movies. These are like all the genres.
Yes.
We try not to like get too detailed in the genre. You can subdivide them. But these are like the 12 main genres. And it's everything. We're going to talk about every movie, all the best ones, all of our favorite ones.
So, yes. And, you know, like we like adventure, action, romance, sci-fi. Like we're not doing like, well, like, and a lot of these movies, they can go into different categories. So if you're like, hey, that's a little bit more of a fantasy movie than it is an adventure movie.
Oh, we're going to be breaking rules.
Yeah, it's all like, over cool. But it still is adventure or whatever. So
this is my list. Get your own podcast.
Get your own podcast, and then you can tell me.
Sorry. We're real sassy today. We got a lot to work out. We got a lot of feelings to work through.
Yeah. All right, Brando.
Which category you want to start with?
I'm just going to say, with the list and how you gave it to me is how we're going to start.
All right.
Brando, give me the greatest adventure movie of all time.
Okay. The greatest adventure movie. So for each of these categories, I came up with so many, like, and we'll talk about them.
Yeah.
Except for this one.
Ooh.
With the adventure category, there's one movie, and it is so far above and beyond anybody.
Where's the crickets? Because I already know what's coming.
You don't know. It's Indiana Jones.
Oh, whoa.
Indiana Jones. Best adventure movie of all time.
I thought for sure.
And if I had to pick one, I'd say The Last Crusade.
I was going to say, I don't have. I mean, I do have a couple that might be a part of some multiple spanning movies, but wow. Okay.
Well, I mean, if you think of like the Nicolas Cage, National Treasure movies, those are great.
Pirates
of
the Caribbean.
Pirates of the Caribbean could easily
Goonies,
be on here.
The Mummy.
Oh, The Mummy. If anyone were to say Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl, I'd be like, yep, okay.
100%.
If you say that's the best adventure movie of all time, yes.
I can't argue with it.
But for me, it's the Big Daddy, man.
Yeah. I mean, Indiana Jones, 100%. And so you would do The Last Crusade.
I would do The Last Crusade.
So
I think that's
the third
best
movie with Sean Connery.
Yeah, yeah, with Sean Connery. I think it's the best one. He rides into the sunset at the end. It's like all these cliches were, like, George Lucas and Steven Spielberg, they took all of these older cliches from these older movies, like the guy with the fedora, the guy with the whip, and he's got a leather jacket and a revolver, and he's got stubble and all that stuff. And they did those cliches. They did them perfectly. It's the perfect representation of those cliches. And even, like I said, you know, The Last Crusade ends with them literally riding into the sunset.
Yeah.
That phrase is a cliche, but they ended the movie like that, and it was utterly perfect.
It is. It 100% is. I honestly cannot disagree with you. Like, Indiana Jones, like I said, that went through my mind.
Would you say another one of the Indiana Jones is better? Because I know you're a big Crystal Skull fan.
Fuck you, buddy. Oh, my God. Wow. Such disrespect. I can't believe you. No, Crystal Skull is definitely not better. We have talked a lot about that.
I know, I'm joking.
No, Dial of Destiny is definitely the best. Ew, I can't finish that. I can't finish that sentence.
You know what's funny? I watched Crystal Skull again, and I enjoyed it a lot more recently.
Comparatively? It makes it, it's like the episodes 1, 2, 3 of Star Wars
like,
are now significantly better.
Yeah, the prequels.
The prequels are significantly better.
That's like Crystal Skull, because it's like, it doesn't hold up to the original trilogy.
No, not at all.
But it's still not terrible. But like Dial of Destiny, it's like, oh my gosh.
It is so bad.
Well, which one would, if you didn't say Last Crusade is the best Indiana Jones, which one would you say?
I mean, then it has to be Temple of Doom. Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, I mean.
But I know you're a big Temple of Doom fan too, right?
I do actually really like Temple of Doom. I think it definitely is a lot darker than the others, and why it doesn't really fit the Indiana Jones, because it's so dark.
Yeah, and it doesn't have any of the recurring characters.
Well, and it's a prequel.
Yeah, it is. Which, most people don't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that until we did the episode and you told me.
Raiders, but Raiders, that intro scene at the very end of the movie, where you just see his Indiana Jones back silhouetted, and then finally the big reveal where he turns around and it's just the key. Oh,
it's so good.
Oh,
it is so good.
That's how you introduce a character in a movie.
100%. All right.
Okay, so what would be your best adventure movie? And I guess, how are we defining adventure? Because it's not action.
It's not action.
Because you ever hear that action adventure?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But and then, you action. Know, fantasy adventure, or, you know, there's horror adventure, like The Mummy's a horror adventure, action horror adventure movie. Adventure, it's just, that's a hard one. I think we talked about a little bit in either National Treasure or when we did the original Indiana Jones stuff, or like The Mummy.
Yeah.
Is different set pieces, you know, it needs to go around to a bunch of different areas, right?
You're going places. You're discovering places.
There has to be something about, like, olden times, like some like mystical force or something like that, from like like thousands of years ago, things like that,
like an Uncharted or Tomb Raider. Those are adventure games. Yeah,
100%. So to me, adventure has to be something like that, where it's I don't want it to take place in like one town. Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, because if you're not going anywhere, it's not an adventure.
Adventure's not an adventure. Yeah. So there's that. So my greatest adventure movie is a movie that I guarantee most people even haven't seen, or if they have seen it, they haven't seen it since it first came out, and it's a movie that came out in 2003.
Oh, wow.
Brandon, would you like to guess?
2003 adventure movie?
Yes.
It's not like The Mummy Returns.
No, it is definitely not The Mummy Returns, though that is a great one.
Is it Sahara?
It is not Sahara.
Okay,
Matthew McConaughey. That's
Matthew McConaughey. Yeah.
It is Secondhand Lions.
Oh, yes.
So this is a very underrated movie. I think we might have talked about this movie.
No, you know what it was? I know exactly what it was. You mentioned it because you're like, oh, this movie's so great. And I said I'd never seen it. And you're like, oh, it's a great adventure movie. You know what? I went home and I watched it.
Yes.
Yes.
Love that.
It's amazing.
Okay. So Secondhand Lions is about this young kid that is played by Haley Joel Osment.
Yep, Sixth Sense.
Sixth Sense. His name's Walter, and it takes place in like the 50s or 60s.
Yeah, something like that.
And he goes to live with his two uncles, who, star-studded cast, you ready for this, is Robert Duvall and Michael Caine.
Is it Michael Caine?
There it is.
Or is that Michael Caine? Or am I Michael Caine?
And it's like these two grumpy dudes, and they're just, you know, and they sit on their porch with shotguns waiting for traveling salesmen to come by.
Classic.
And you're like, why is this an adventure movie? Well, what ends up happening is there's this lore behind his two uncles that during World War One or Two.
Well, they're telling the stories in flashbacks.
That there's this lore that they like stole money from the sheik and like
they were in the French Foreign Legion.
And it's just like, so you get to see like all these set pieces of like this olden times, but it's in the perspective because it's Michael Caine telling him the story. So it's like overdone and funny, but you get to see like
over
them
the
go
top
back.
Heroes.
And it's like, you know, and it's the sheik looks like the atypical, almost kind of racist sheik.
But they don't take it too far.
No, definitely not. But it's not anything like that. But it's just like kind of funny. Like he's like the evil guy with an eye patch. You know, it's an oil tycoon now
but
and
then,
whatnot.
Then he falls in love with one of the little princesses
and
there.
And he like goes to save her. Yeah. And like, so it's just like, classic. It's this great, it's coming of age movie. It's about this kid who doesn't have a father and he finds two father figures that begrudgingly don't want him, but then they fall in love with him.
Yeah.
And they start spending the money and there's this actual lion that they buy.
Because they bought an actual lion.
Yeah. A secondhand lion.
And it got out and it lived in their cornfield.
Yep.
But these guys are so badass adventurers. Even as old men, they weren't afraid of the lion. Oh,
and they go out with their boots on. They buy a biplane, you know, an old school biplane,
old school.
And go flying and like try to fly it through the barn and miss, and they die doing that.
But that's how they died because they always talked about that.
Yeah.
And so they went out, they were like 90 years old or something, and they flew this plane that they built. And it doesn't show it, like the son has grown up and he comes and he finds out how they died. But he has a smile on his face because he knows that his uncles had one last adventure together. Oh, I'm getting goosebumps.
It's so good.
That's such a great pick, Owen.
Oh, thank you. I had a feeling that one, because it is an adventure movie. I mean, it's tagged as a comedy drama, but I would say it truly is an adventure movie.
It is. It is an adventure movie.
And I mean, the acting's awesome. Robert Duvall, this movie made me fall in love with Robert Duvall. I actually think he's one of our greatest actors.
I loved him in Deep Impact.
Deep Impact. Gosh.
That's a good movie, though.
What is it? Open Range. Open Range almost went on my list, too.
Ooh.
Not for adventure, but for another category. Robert Duvall gives this great speech about what it is to be a man.
That's right. Because he had the local town bullies.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried to like pick on him because they're old men, and he just like beat the crap out of him, but not like too much, just enough to rough him up. And then he gave him that speech.
He gave him a speech.
And the kids respected him. Mm-hmm. It was, it's like an old school kind of values type deal.
Yep.
But it's like an idealized version of that. Everything is so idealized in that movie. That's what I love about that. It's so cute.
It's great.
It is. It's a great movie.
Yeah. And it's just great. And then, you know, Haley Joel Osment in it, he's kind of bashful and just not really confident.
Yeah.
And then towards the end of the movie, he like channels his uncle's energy and fights off this creep boyfriend of his mom. It's just everything about the movie.
Yeah.
It's coming of age, father figures, adventure. It's fantastic.
It's a fun movie. And when you're done with it, you feel great.
Yes.
Oh, I love it. That's such a great pick.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I'm jealous. I changed mine. Actually, I don't. I got to stick with
it. No.
But
I mean, it still falls into it, right? Like, you know, it's the adventure is them talking about these olden times and these flashbacks.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay.
All right, next category. We have 12 categories.
We have 12 categories.
Number one, here's number two.
We're shotgunning this. We're going through it pretty fast. So.
Well, we're talking about all movies ever.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Next one, I will go first. So we're going to get into the action category.
All right, there we go. Where's my action? I got to look for my
notes.
And
this one took me a long time. Okay.
Ooh.
So when it comes to action movies, of course you throw John Wick in there, right? John Wick, great action movies.
Made by a stunt guy.
Made by a stunt guy, yeah.
So it's going to be great action.
It's going to be great. But like the storyline, there's really no storyline.
Yeah.
Okay. What like Mission Impossible's great as well.
Number five, Fallout.
Fallout,
fantastic. Yeah.
But once again, I'm like, it's a great movie, spectacle, but I'm not really like, in the story's just so over the top.
Maybe not the best.
Yeah.
You got to be perfect to be on the top.
100% you do.
Yeah.
And that's why I chose the 1995 movie directed by Robert Rodriguez, Desperado.
Oh, what a great pick.
Dude.
Oh my God.
So I'm sitting there and I am contemplating, right? Like I walked you through kind of like what I was going through. I was like Die Hard, you know, all these different ones.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I kept coming back to Desperado.
That's such a great pick.
Antonio Banderas, Salma Hayek.
Oh,
okay.
That was Salma Hayek at her
hottest,
dude.
She's still hot.
She is.
Oh, my gosh. So it's stylized. Right? Like, the way that the guns, like, when Antonio Banderas, he carries around a guitar case
full of guns. So cool.
And he never has to reload.
Oh, yeah.
And, but, like, he shoots guys, and they go flying. There's just blood everywhere. And it's Rob Rodriguez just at his peak, right? Yeah. And it is just, and the storyline's fantastic. It's, I just, everything about this.
Well, he's the classic, like, wandering, guy. And, but that gunfight in the bar.
In the bar, yes.
That's iconic. Mm-hmm. And everyone in that bar is loaded with guns.
Yeah.
And they are all going down guns blazing. None of them run away scared. They're all like, oh, I'm going to shoot this guy.
We're going down. Let's do this.
I just love Antonio Banderas. Like he's got that long hair and he's got like his guns in his hands. And he like pulls his hair out of his face with his guns and stuff. It's just like, it's so cool.
Because what is it? It's Steve Buscemi's in it. And Steve Buscemi's kind of like his scout. So he like goes around to places and tells this story of this like, and he's like, the biggest Mexican I've ever seen. And he's like walking through the bar, and it seems like the shadows like always shroud his face and like walk with him. And I was like, it is just, everything about it is amazing. Unfortunately, it was followed up by Once Upon a Time in Mexico, which is not a good movie.
I enjoyed it, but it was nowhere near as good. Yeah.
But Antonio Banderas, the unnamed man, he's El Mariachi.
El Mariachi.
Which is the first movie. This is technically the sequel to El Mariachi. But
you don't need to have seen the first one. No. Desperado stands on its own.
100%. And I mean, Danny Trejo with the throwing all the knives, the Spanish guitar playing. You got Cheech Marin in it too.
Oh, yeah. Cheech Marin. Cheech Marin, yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't he the bartender?
He was the bartender.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, the bartender always lives. Hey.
That's what he sounds like. The bartender always lives, hey? I don't think he lived, though.
No, he did not.
Spoiler
he
alert.
Got it. He's like, oh, no, he got it the worst.
Wasn't he on a mission of revenge or something?
Yeah, so if you watch El Mariachi to kind of understand the story, but Antonio Banderas, during his wedding, like a gangster came and killed everybody.
Right. Oh.
And he survived.
Classic.
And
Kill
so
Bill.
He's yeah. And so he's going to kill him, and he ends up finding out it's his brother.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Great movie.
That is a great pick.
Yeah. Stylized action. Like, I know I keep saying it, but stylized action, good drama, a good love story. And the movie flows so well. It's one of those movies where I can't think of a scene that should be cut out.
But that's like, that's all about the guns.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just so many cool guns just shooting.
He just keeps going into the guitar case. And then he gets the rest of his band, which are all the other assassins. And each one of them have a guitar case as well that does different. One's a rocket launcher.
Oh,
one's a minigun.
That's right. Yeah.
It's fantastic. All right, Brando.
So for me, I agree. You mentioned Die Hard. Die Hard is on my list. You can easily say the first Die Hard movie. Even Die Hard with a Vengeance, which is the third one, is
also
a great movie.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking another one, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. That's
if
you're talking about kung fu action, that's, I think, the best. That's my favorite kung fu movie. That is, even if you're and I think I did before make an argument for Crouching Tiger being one of the best movies of all time.
Yeah,
I think we
did talk about that in one episode. I can't remember which one, though.
But when you're talking about the best action movie of all time, I've got to give it to the governor. Terminator 2,
Terminator
Judgment
2?
Day.
Oh my gosh, wow.
Terminator 2, Judgment Day, I think is the best action movie ever made.
So funny enough, I almost chose Last Action Hero.
Oh, really?
For this one.
That even has action in the name.
Yeah, but I couldn't because it's a satire. It's really good action, but it's meant to be satire.
You could choose it, but it was satirizing the action genre. But Terminator 2... they had the twist where the Terminator is now the good guy who's reprogrammed to protect John Connor.
Yeah.
And he's the unstoppable killing machine, but now he's the bodyguard. Right. And then you have the villain who is hunting them.
Sir
the
James
whole
Patrick
movie.
Stewart.
Yeah. No, that's Captain Picard.
No, Sir James Patrick Stewart.
Is that his name?
No, it's Pat. God damn it.
It's T-1000. It's that guy.
Yeah.
His name is T-1000. They just went with his real life name.
Robert Patrick Stewart.
He can like form into any other thing. So he can like blades and hooks and then like killing people and becoming them and stuff. Oh, it was such a perfect movie. If you're talking about the guns, it's got the guns, it's got the stunts.
And it has the one-liners.
No. I mean, this is...
I'll be back.
I'll be back was in it. They brought that back. I think Hasta la Vista, Baby. I think that originated
Hasta la
in the second one.
Baby.
And even... And then finally, you have all the action set pieces, right? You have... Here they're fighting in the mall. Here they're fighting in this... industrial plant.
Yep.
Here
and they're driving through the drain ditch.
Yes.
That's
yeah.
one of the great. Oh,
oh,
oh so
the
good.
The aqueduct.
Aqueduct. Yeah.
You know what I mean.
Yeah.
So you have like stuff on the road. You have stuff hand to hand. And then finally, it culminates with this big sacrifice of the hero.
Mm-hmm.
So even the story, yeah, the thumbs up at the end, it's a meme. It's an actual meme. Like, the story is so good, and you actually care about these characters, so you yeah. care if they live or die. It's got one of the funniest Arnold Schwarzenegger lines when he gets on the phone with his foster parents. And they're talking to him. Little John Connor's talking to his foster parents.
Oh yeah.
And then Arnold gets on the phone. He takes the phone from it and imitates John Connor's voice. He's like, "How's little
Scruffy?
Scruffy doing?" Yeah. And they're like, "Oh, and Scruffy, he's fine." And he hung up the phone and goes, "Your parents are dead." Just like I was like, "Oh my god!" And he was right. He showed that. Oh, they'd be killed. Oh, it's the perfect. I mean, Miles Dyson. That whole when they were infiltrating Cyberdyne. Yeah, and the whole Miles Dyson scene, and he was a civilian there, but then he made a heroic sacrifice. Mm-hmm. Dude, this movie has everything, and everything is done so perfectly. The special effects, the stunts, the action, the fighting, it's done so perfectly. It's just, it's very long, but it keeps you on the edge of your seat the whole time.
Yes.
It's the best action movie of all time.
I can't argue with you on that one.
Yeah, it's great.
It's fantastic.
And even if you're not an action movie, you can watch it and be like, this is...
Yes.
Because then you have stuff like Commando and stuff that are kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, but Commando, though, is just strictly just about the... And that's what I was saying, like, if you want to talk action, just like in like the martial arts, the fighting, the gunplay, neither one of these movies wins. But
yeah.
I'm like in a complete total sense of a movie.
With the story.
Yeah, and the story and the acting and everything. I'm like, that's what I wanted is
the total package.
Yes.
To be the best, you got to have everything.
Yep, 100%.
Yeah. And you can make an argument for any of those, and I wouldn't disagree with you.
Yeah.
But I just think Terminator 2 is where it's at, man.
I'm right there with you.
All right.
So, Brando, we're going to move on to romance movies.
Romance?
Yes.
I'm a romance expert.
Oh, are you?
No,
well, you are
about.
The married one between us, too. So.
That doesn't mean anything, trust me.
Side note, back to Terminator really quick, actually.
Yeah.
Did you see what my name, I changed my team name in fantasy football
no,
this week?
It's not, wasn't it Dungeonmeister, right?
No. It was, I can't remember what my team name was beforehand.
Who cares? What is it?
I changed it because I was facing my Sarah.
Yeah.
So I changed it to T-800.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Anyways, all right. So, Brando, romance movies.
Romance is it's not my shortest list because Adventure, I only had one on my list. I was thinking of romance. And, you know, recently we talked about, like, for example, Titanic. Mm-hmm. And I loved that romance. But with a romance, I want to feel it. Like, I want to feel feelings. It's obviously you have to care about these characters. You have to like these characters. You have to root for them. And I think Titanic does it really well. And it's got the backdrop of this big story.
Yeah.
But I think in some ways, if you're looking for the most perfect, the best romance, the backdrop kind of overshadows the romance.
I would say so for you.
Because the singing of the Titanic is like the big deal of that movie, right? And so for me, I got to give it to Princess Bride.
Oh my gosh. So I had a joke with Princess Bride that I was going to put Princess Bride as my answer for every category, and you could not prove me wrong.
Because it fits them all.
It fits every genre. Oh my, okay, I immediately feel better about my decision. I was like, I might get shit on a little bit for my movie, but let's talk Princess Bride.
Dude, as you wish. I mean, it's
as
how he's like the little, what is it, the little house boy, the little farm boy, Wesley?
Yeah. And stable boy.
The stable boy. That's right. And he falls in love with her, and she's so beautiful. It's so it's literally a fairy tale.
Yeah.
And then he becomes the Dread Pirate Roberts. And
the Pit of Despair.
All of the characters, every
Inigo
single
Inigo Montoya.
Oh, you killed my father. They're prepared to die. And then you got the Sicilian, who is inconceivable.
Yeah.
You know, and then Andre the Giant, you know.
Fezzik.
Fezzik. Like, every single character, the villains, everyone. Every
Vicini,
character
the, the Sicilian. Vicini the Sicilian.
They are so perfect. They are so iconic. This movie is full. And not only that, but then you got Billy Crystal. And I can never remember the actress's name, who is his wife. I always remember her from Scrooged. She was the...
Carol Kane.
Carol Kane.
Yep.
Oh, and she's in Strange New Worlds, Star Trek Strange New Worlds Season 2, which is great. Now, that happened on purpose.
Now it's not wanting me to.
But like, and they're so funny. The characters are so adorable, and, yeah. and it is a literal fairy tale storybook.
It is. He has to. He's a farm boy, a little stable boy in this farm, and is in love with Princess Butter with Buttercup.
Yes,
and has
Boo, true love, Boo,
Rob, Rob.
But
marriage.
It's we can sit here and just quote Princess Bride.
So I've officiated weddings before, and every time I do, somebody quotes. They're like marriage.
Oh, really? Oh,
every time someone says it.
But like, so it's him, and he's a little stable boy and can't provide for Buttercup. So he goes and he like leaves the farm to go find a job to make more money so he can provide a better life for her.
His princess.
His yeah. princess. And it's just like, oh, reunite. The fire, the swamp of...
Swamp of Sorrows, was it? No, not Sorrows. I can't remember. But they had the big rats.
Yeah, the rodents of unusual size.
Rodents
of R-O-U-S's.
And the eels in the water,
shrieking
too.
Eels.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Every part of this movie is just so perfect. And yeah. then bringing him back to life and Andre the Giant carrying him around is like... He's like, I thought he was dead. He's like, he's only mostly dead.
Yeah. Stop rhyming. I mean it.
Anybody want a peanut?
Fred Savage. I mean, there's been so many, like the Deadpool 2, their Christmas remake they did with it, where it's Deadpool reading to Fred Savage as if it was Princess Bride.
I haven't seen that, actually. Oh, yeah.
They made a PG-13 version of Deadpool 2.
Yeah.
And it's they start it with him reading to Fred Savage.
It's just great. It's a literal storybook romance. Yeah. And I just love it. It's just so endearing, and I love every moment of it.
You know, like I said, my joke was I was thinking about just putting it's like romance, Princess Bride, crime, Princess Bride,
fantasy,
action, fantasy,
drama.
Like it's every.
And
it
they even have the sword fighting. Ag was stunts and everything.
It's
yeah.
insane. It is literally one of the best movies of all time.
It is. If someone were to say it was their favorite movie of all time, I'd go, okay, yeah I get that.
Yeah,
100%. I totally understand
that. It's up there in mind. I'm actually surprised I don't have a Princess Bride tattoo.
Oh, we know. We got to fix that.
So
what was yours? What was your
all right,
best
so
romance?
So for me, romance movies. So like, you know, a lot of movies that I like and shows I like because, you know, working in the service industry. So like I immediately went to this movie called No Reservation with Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Okay, I haven't seen that.
And Aaron Eckhart. And so they're working in a kitchen together, and they fall in love. Thought about that. There's a Mel Gibson movie, What Women Want.
Oh,
which
yeah.
is a good one, too.
Where you could read their minds.
Yeah. But now hear me out. This one movie where I was thinking about this category just kept coming back to me.
Yeah?
And it's Forrest Gump.
Really? How the hell is that a romance?
Because it's all about him and Jenny.
Okay.
So, like, it's another one where it's just like, honestly, that movie, like, it doesn't play like a romance movie at all.
It really doesn't, yeah.
But Forrest Gump's entire drive for that movie is always Jenny.
Ever since they're little kids.
Ever since they were little kids. Like, he was in love with her from the beginning when they first met her. I love you, Jenny. And, like, everything he does is try to protect her, and she doesn't want to love him because he's different. Like, she loves him.
Well, he's nice to her.
Yeah.
And she has a traumatic past, and so she can't accept his love. Because he's not, she
that's
can only be with
it.
Abusive men.
And yes.
And
which
that's
is,
why she
if you
can't
watch
it,
yeah, the entire time,
now
that's
she's
what
been
happens.
Through some stuff, man.
Yeah, but like he goes through this incredible journey. I mean, like the struggle of being different, right? Yeah. A neurodivergent is how they would say it today.
But it doesn't hold him back.
It doesn't hold him back. And
it doesn't
ping
make him
pong,
lesser. Yeah.
War, like running, football, everything. But like honestly, the entire drive of the movie, because you have to remember it's him sitting down on a park bench.
Yeah.
And it's him telling his story to all these different people.
Just waiting for the bus to
And
arrive.
He's waiting for the bus to get to Jenny.
Yeah.
And that's the entire point of the movie is him just telling his story.
That's so cute.
And
I
at the
it.
End of it, it's one of my favorite scenes, is when he finally sees Jenny and she's like, I have a kid. I named him Forrest after his dad.
Yeah.
And the first thing he says is he like me?
Oh, I know. Oh, that's such a heartbreaking line. Oh. That line. Tom Hanks, dude. Tom Hanks.
Never go full retard. Sorry. Completely different movie, but.
This is what men do to keep themselves from just crumbling.
Yes, we use comedy to not cry. But honestly, like, you fight me on it. I get it, right?
No, I'm going with you, man.
But I honestly think, like, it's not this like love story throughout like the entire thing, but the majority of it is a love story. Yeah. And the overall plot is Forrest Gump waiting on a bench to get to the love of his life that he hasn't seen in years.
Yeah. And it's not a traditional cliche either. It's, yeah. It's a big endearing story. I use that word again, endearing. It's just, it's heartfelt.
It's yeah, and that's what I'm
pick. I like that.
Thank you.
That's also, really out of the box.
One of the best soundtracks too of a movie.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh geez.
Well, let's move it on. So we got the gushy stuff out of the way. Let's get back into something manly.
Here we go.
And we're going to talk about sci-fi movies.
Sci-fi movies.
So I'll go on this one.
Yeah, you go for it.
Now sci-fi, this one took a lot, right? Because as a sci-fi guy, like that's one of my favorite genres of movies. I went through, obviously, Star Wars.
Yeah.
Right? Dune. And I'm talking about the new Dune. The Road to Treasure Planet. Like, I went through, like, all these different weird sci-fi. Even the Final Fantasy movie that came out in, like, 2002 or something like that.
Oh, that CGI one?
Yeah. Which isn't a good movie, but, like, at the time, the graphics were insane.
Yeah, that's true.
But
The Spirits Within, that's what it was called.
No, that's right. I had to give it. This is probably one of my only, like, atypical picks. But the best sci-fi movie of all time.
Yeah.
Is another Governator movie.
Huh?
It is. The Predator.
Nice!
So it's when you talk about iconic 80s movies, Predator has to be in there.
Yeah.
It is the most macho, manly, but as well, it has some of the most iconic sound effects. Like if I played at any moment, yeah, like whoosh, if I had, yeah.
Whoosh,
yeah. Look around, everyone immediately know. Oh yeah, that's the Predator, that's thermal Predator, vision.
Yeah.
100%.
That's so funny because I was just watching like one of the latest episodes of Rick and Morty that just came out.
Okay.
And they had the Predator in it. And
oh,
it's,
really?
It's such an iconic movie monster that like it's in so many things.
Yes.
It's referenced so all over the place.
And, you know, honestly, I went back and forth between this and Alien as well.
Nice.
But there's just something like so iconic about the Predator. You know, it's like, I don't got time to bleed. There's like all those one-liners.
Yeah. Well, that's a good example where the movie starts out like Commando.
Yes.
It starts out like an action movie,
mm-hmm.
and as you're watching the movie, you get it. It's like, oh, this is an action movie.
Yeah.
They cast Arnold Schwarzenegger in it.
Yes.
So everyone, it's like, you know what to expect, you know?
Yeah.
You know, even Apollo Creed is in it, you know? They do Dylan,
yeah.
You know, and they do the meme where they
Dylan,
slap him.
You son of a bitch.
You son of a bitch, you know? It's all muscles. They go into this village. They kill up all these cartel guys, and it's so action. Even that line from Jesse Ventura, who's like, I ain't got time to bleed. Everything is so action movie cliche.
Long tongue, Sally.
And then
you got everything you need.
And then it pulls the rug out from under you and kills them all.
Yep.
And the only one left, who's Arnold Schwarzenegger, who is the biggest action star of all time.
100% he is.
And he can barely keep up with, he can barely survive this Predator. And you're just like, oh my gosh, this thing is terrible.
It's crazy. Yeah, I mean, we talked about that before, like my theory about movies with a shtick. Predator is one of them. Where it's like the movie could have just been an action movie.
Yeah,
where it's commandos going in the jungle on a rescue mission.
And it was fun. It was
and that was
well,
great.
Yeah.
That entire like first third of the movie is fantastic. But then it transitions into this great sci-fi movie, which, as well, if you have the time, all the other Predator movies suck. Besides Predators, that movie was okay.
Well, I wouldn't say they suck, but they don't live up to the first one.
Yeah, the Predator 2 was terrible.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was nowhere near. I wouldn't say it was terrible, but it was nowhere near the first one.
And then Predators with Adrian Brody.
Yeah.
Is actually decent.
Yeah, it was decent.
And then this last one that came out
with
the Predator.
Now that one with wait, is that the one with the woman who's a Native American?
No. What is it? I forgot about that Predator movie. That one's fantastic.
Where it takes
too.
Place in like the 1600s or something.
Yeah. But there was one beforehand.
Now that movie's great. That one.
Yeah. The one on, it's a Hulu original.
Yeah.
That one's great. But there's one beforehand with what's her name and what's his name?
Kids. Yeah. I didn't even watch them. Like, so they got so bad that I was and of course, the Alien versus Predator.
Predator has some really good comics out there. So if you are a comic fan, read some Predators.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's good.
Good crossovers too, with like Batman and stuff.
Yeah, Predator versus Batman. They did a comic book series based off the pistol from Predator 2.
Yeah.
That like pirate, like the flintlock pistol gets tossed. They did a whole comic book series about where that pistol comes from and what happened.
They made that joke on Rick and Morty where the Predator, he tossed him a flintlock pistol And Rick was like, I think that's their currency.
That's pretty good. But yeah, for sci-fi movies, it's one of the best.
Nice.
If not the best.
For me, the sci-fi list is the longest.
I had a feeling it would be.
I've always
Star Trek movie did you choose?
I've always been the biggest sci-fi fan. Sci-fi has always been my favorite genre. And I'm looking at stuff like, I think you can look at Aliens. Second one.
Great.
You can put Alien on there too. 100%. Aliens is more almost sci-fi as opposed to sci-fi horror, sci-fi action, you know. I would put Blade Runner 2049 up on the
Thank
list.
Thank you for not actually putting that one.
That I love that movie. The vibe is great. It's beautiful. You could talk about something like Back to the Future. Back to the Future.
Ooh.
Yeah. Has an utterly perfect trilogy. All three of those movies are utterly perfect from top to bottom.
Yeah.
So well written, so funny, so interesting, so fun, so unique. Doc Brown, that character is like, Kramer before there was a Kramer. You know what I mean?
You're might be getting me to change my answer.
I know.
I might change it to Back to the Future over Predator.
I would even say a good contender would be E.T. You have like the classic E.T. is an iconic character now. The E.T. phone home. Just it's so iconic of a kid finding this animal and taking him in, but then realizing he's got to release him back to the wild. I mean, it's Free Willy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I have to give it to, if you're talking about the best sci-fi movie
Are you doing
of all
Dune?
Time, I'm not doing Dune.
Okay.
I love Dune, though.
Yeah,
I
the
love
new
Dune.
One.
But
the
it's
new
still
one.
It's still new.
Okay,
I think we need more time to breathe, see what the sequel's going to be. I'm going to give the best sci-fi movie of all time is Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, my. I have never loved you more.
Yeah, it's
than this moment right now,
it
Brando.
Is not, I mean, Empire Strikes Back is what made Star Wars iconic. Star Wars, A New Hope, was a great movie.
Great movie, yes.
But then they came out, then the sequel was even better.
Yes.
If it was just Star Wars, people would say, oh, this is a great movie, and we'd still be talking about it. But the fact that Empire Strikes Back, that's what made it a cultural phenomenon.
Yes.
This is the biggest, most iconic movie franchise of all time. And this is, I mean, it's billions of dollars. It's our culture. I mean, people grew up. I mean, you have Star Wars tattoos. You permanently inked on your body.
Yes.
These characters, the lightsabers, it's dripping with iconic.
Yeah, and you have to realize, like, with Empire Strikes Back, that movie is jam-packed with plot and storyline.
Yeah.
There is so much that happens in that movie that is it's crazy to think about, right? So you have, obviously, the Battle of Hoth.
Yeah, which is amazing.
Amazing. Bespin.
Yeah, the Cloud City.
Cloud City and Bespin.
Such cool sci-fi
Dagobah.
Concepts.
Yeah, and then Dagobah. Yeah. The fight
Yoda
scenes.
In the swamp. They introduced Yoda. Yeah. Oh, the.
And know what's best about it?
What?
No goddamn Ewoks.
You know what? Star Wars has still not made a movie as good. They still haven't.
No.
Even to this day. And they've had their peaks and valleys. You know what I mean?
There's been some big valleys, let me tell you.
But there's been some peaks, too. There's been some good stuff. There's some good moments.
Rogue One, I do contend. I always go back and forth with Empire and Rogue One.
But there are moments, even in the prequel trilogy, where you look at the lightsaber battle between Anakin and Obi-Wan.
The one at the end is fantastic.
Things like that, where the moments reach. But as far as a whole movie, that is just. Empire Strikes Back is perfect from start to finish. It's a perfect sequel. A perfect sci-fi movie, a perfect fun movie, and there's a reason why it is the most iconic movie.
100%. I mean, more lightsaber action, the duel between Luke and Vader. Yeah.
I am your father?
The reveal?
That became a thing.
Yes.
That is the biggest cultural meme ever.
100%.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's just so great. And
no, it can't be true.
That's impossible.
That's impossible.
Oh, it's great, though, man.
It's a great one. All right. Well, since we went into sci-fi, we might as well go straight to fantasy.
All right.
Now, Brando, what is the greatest single fantasy movie ever made?
All right. You know what my answer is.
I do know, but you have to give me one single one. I'm not going to allow you to give me the entire trilogy of Lord of the Rings.
I'll say this. Let me give you a couple others.
Like I said, you can say it, but you have to include the Hobbit movies.
But if Conan the Barbarian is a fantasy movie that I think is hugely underrated.
Yes.
I'm a huge Arnold fan. I think Conan the Barbarian is a great, what they call swords and sandals movie.
Yes.
I think it is a contender for one of the great fantasy movie of all time. In fact, I will say this. His sword in that movie, I think, is the best sword ever. It's the coolest. It's the most perfect proportions, the most perfect design, better than any other sword.
Huge in that movie.
He was so big that he couldn't do the sword fighting. His muscles were he actually had to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
He went on a diet because his muscles, he couldn't wrap his arms around holding that sword. I think you can make an argument for The Wizard of Oz. One of the earliest, most iconic.
I'm swaying back and forth, and
that movie's huge, and it's great too. It's a classic. That's another fairy tale storybook.
Yeah, it's just hard for me to call it a fantasy movie.
I mean, it is. I mean, they go to a fantasy world, and they have witches and flying monkeys. So many iconic. The Green Witch. You know, I think she made witches green. You know what I mean? I don't think witches were presented as green before that. You know,
interesting. Okay.
But because they used color like that, because that was new, that technology was new. But, of course, if you're talking about the best, the utter perfection, then it would be The Lord of the Rings.
Which one?
The movie that is 12 hours long in extended editions. In three chapters. The 12-hour long Lord of the Rings movie. It's utterly perfect. It's utterly perfect.
All right. In all seriousness, though, I need you to give me one of the trilogy.
You know what? Okay.
It's our final episode.
If I had to give one, I would go with the first one, The Fellowship of the Ring.
Wow, really? The Fellowship? Not Return of the King?
No.
Not Two Towers?
No, because even though the Battle of Helm's Deep is in Two Towers, the second one, which I think that's the best thing. Or in Return of the King, when Rohan shows up at Gondor and King Theoden gives the speech. If you've never seen... look up on YouTube J.R.R. Tolkien reading the Rohirrim speech.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Google, it will give you goosebumps. It'll make you want to get up and live a better life. It is like, oh my gosh. But those moments are great, but I would say The Fellowship because it spends so much time of them just existing in this fantasy world. I loved that they just lived in Hobbiton. You know, in the Shire, they spent time there. It was so simple, and they just let everything breathe.
Yeah.
They let the world breathe. They let the characters
breathe.
It seems
so
rush
light
anything.
And fantastic and crazy, and the Gandalf and the dragon fireworks and meeting Samwise Gamgee. And
it's wonderful. And then when they go to fight to save the world, you know what they're fighting for, and you care about it. It's honestly the three chapter Lord of the Rings movies. Not only would I say is the greatest fantasy movie of all time, I would actually put it as the greatest movie of all time.
Wow. I mean, I would probably choose Return of the King.
Nice. Because
that scene when Aragorn gets off the boat and, like, charges the army and, like, all the ghosts come with him is such a cool
scene. With all the scrubbing bubbles?
Yeah, the scrubbing bubbles. It's such a great scene. But, no, honestly, I'd probably do Two Towers. I think Two Towers is the best of the three.
I mean, I wouldn't argue with you on any of that stuff. What would you say, fantasy-wise?
Okay.
Aside from Princess Bride.
Aside from Princess Bride.
Even though that would totally fit this
Brando,
category.
I'm going to let you try to guess what fantasy movie I chose.
All right.
It's a movie that you and I have talked about. I don't believe we've talked about it on banter and such, but I have talked about my love for this movie.
Oh my gosh. Is it?
It is 1985.
Is it? Is it Excalibur?
It is not Excalibur.
1985.
It is directed by Ridley Scott.
Directed by Ridley Scott in 1985.
Yes.
Oh, you know you're messing me up. I mean, I know he did Robin Hood,
but that was 90s. Yeah.
Yeah. Ridley Scott.
Ridley Scott.
1985. What did he do? Oh, you got me stumped. You're gonna say it, and I'm gonna kick myself.
The absolute amazing sleeper hit, Legend.
Oh, nice.
So, if you don't know. Legend, 1985. It is Tom Cruise's first leading role.
That's right.
And he plays this little boy that lives in a forest, and there is this thing that's called the darkness.
Yeah.
And it is literally the devil, played by Tim Curry.
Oh, yes. Like, dressed up at the horns. Red. And yes. I mean, so classic.
And Tim Curry, as the darkness, the devil, wants to kill the last unicorns in order to bring apart eternal darkness.
I love that.
And there's this princess that also he wants to marry named Lily in it. And so Tom Cruise, who plays Jack, he's just Jack the hero.
Yeah.
He goes on a quest to save Lily and as well to defeat the darkness. And it is some amazing set design, some amazing action sequences. Tim Curry is terrifying.
I mean, Tim Curry as the devil.
This predates it.
Yeah.
So he wasn't Pennywise yet.
Yeah.
And just to have him be it, I can.
Is this
gush about
after
it.
Rocky Horror Picture Show?
I believe so.
Okay. So Ridley Scott saw Rocky Horror Picture Show as like that guy
that
can
yeah.
be just out there. Yeah.
1975, 10 years later, was
okay, yeah,
was
yeah,
legend.
Yeah,
yeah. But yeah. It's one of those movies that, like, I will say this, is slow. It is a movie that you more than likely will fall asleep to sometimes.
Okay. But fantasy, you got to feel the vibe.
Yeah.
The fantasy.
There's a lot of that. And Tom Cruise is great in it yeah. with his middle tooth.
If you rush, his tooth is right
in the middle
of his
face.
Mouth.
Yeah.
Once you see that, you
cannot see it yet.
Oh my gosh. But fantasy is one of those genres that you can't rush because so many people want to rush it and get into the story. And that's why so many fantasy, if you notice, like a lot of fantasy movies are not good.
No.
Like for some reason, this is a genre that just doesn't have a lot of good movies.
There's another genre that also doesn't have a lot of good movies that we'll talk about later.
But you got to give it time to breathe and get into the world because you have to, in fantasy, it's not the real world. So you have to learn the world.
Yes.
And you can't rush that.
No, you can't. And so they do a good job of that, explaining it through all the way. I haven't watched it recently enough to like give like more breakdown. But, you know, so to give you an idea, like I thought Willow was close for me.
Willow's great.
The original Willow was there. I'm trying to think of some other fantasy movies that was best fantasy.
Willow's a great one. Masters of the Universe with Dolph Lundgren.
Oh, no. Definitely not. Neverending Story. Labyrinth.
Neverending Story.
Dragonheart, I almost put up there, too.
I am the last one.
Yeah.
Sean Connery.
Highlander was up there for a while, too, for me. I love the Highlander series.
Nice.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Well, let's keep this moving along.
What genre we got next?
We're going to do thrillers.
Thrillers. So thrillers is...
This one was hard.
That's the most ambiguous genre.
Yes.
Because thriller, I think it's not scary necessarily.
It's
not
unsettling.
Horror. Yeah. It's thriller. It's like, it's exciting. It's unsettling. It's
makes the hair stick up on the back of your neck with not necessarily having you bury your face in a pillow to hide...
Yeah.
The TV screen.
So, and I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if you and I are going to line up on the genre or not, because I feel like thriller, you can define that in so many different ways.
Right, like psychological thriller, horror thriller, action thriller. Like there's crime thrillers.
Yeah.
You know, there's so whodunits.
Yeah.
Is in a thriller category too.
But what's making you anxious? What's raising your hairs? What's, you know, getting your heart racing?
Well, no, it's to me first on this one.
I was just going to mention that. We haven't said it so far, but I love that we have not discussed ahead of time what our movies are.
No, I originally wanted us to, but then I was like, no, I want to react.
I am loving discovering what your movies are.
All right.
This is great.
So this one is a family favorite of ours. We watch it almost every single Christmas.
Ooh.
Yes. And it is, I truly believe, Stephen King's best movie adaptation, the 1990 classic Misery.
Whoa, nice.
When was the last time you watched that?
It has been a long, I don't know, man. I think I like caught on TV like a long time
so
ago.
Okay, so James Caan,
yeah,
who's famous from The Godfather,
yeah.
He plays a writer.
Who's a powerful man. He's played a lot of powerful
Who's also
roles.
An elf.
Yes.
Right?
Dad!
I love you, I love you, I love you.
Who is this man? Get him out of my office.
Oh, look at you. But James Caan's in it, and he is a writer, and he's wrote this whole book series called Misery.
Yeah, he plays Stephen King.
King, basically.
Essentially, yeah.
And he has a book deal for one more book, but he has writer's block, and so he decides to go up to this cabin where he's always written every single one of his movies at. Well, it's snowy and things like that, and he gets in a car accident, and Kathy Bates
plays
the villain in this movie named Annie Wilkes. And she rescues him, brings him back to her place, realizes who it is, and then kidnaps him. But in the guise of, well, you're hurt. Like, he had a broken arm, broken legs, and like from this car accident. Like, she's nursing him back to health.
Yeah.
So she's kidnapping him, but is making him believe that he can't leave because she's a nurse and is helping him.
Well, she's, yeah, she's keeping him trapped there.
But she's also a psycho fan
she's
of his.
Oh, and that's the whole, that's what she's really trying to do.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
I love
so
it.
It's a thriller because as things start to happen, you now are realizing that he is trapped and he's trying to escape and figure out ways. He's now thinking about killing her, and it has, I am not kidding you, one of the most iconic, grossest scenes.
And it's not that gross, but it is.
But it is.
Yeah.
So he eventually does get healed enough where he can start walking around, and he walks around the house with Kathy Bates telling him not to.
Yeah.
Mr. Man. Yeah. And that's one of her lines.
I think he tries to escape.
And tries to escape. And so she hobbles him. She ties him back down to the bed, puts a cinder, like a block of wood.
Like a 2x4 block in between his legs.
Yep. Just above the ankle. And she takes a sledgehammer to each one of his feet, and they show it.
Oh, and hits his foot sideways,
breaking it again.
So that he can't, so he's hobbled. He can't escape. And she does it so like casually.
Yeah.
And he's so helpless because he's bedridden and everything, you know, or he can't, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my gosh, you feel so helpless in that moment.
It just, the tension of the movie builds. And that's why I like it as a thriller.
Yeah.
So I'll give you some runner-ups for me. Memento.
Great was one.
Another one. Christopher Nolan,
early
Memento.
Early Christopher Nolan, yeah.
That was up there. Let me see here.
Memento, the movie that's backwards.
Yes.
It starts at the end, and then it goes in 5-minute segments to the start of the story.
Yes. So Memento, it was brilliant. Up there. I was thinking a lot of, I can't think of his name. Sixth Sense.
Yeah. Yeah, M. Night Shyamalan.
Shyamalan, Ding Dong. I thought a lot of his movies as well. Seven was up there.
Yes, great one.
But it just there's something about Misery that just kept pulling me back, and it is a movie that I watch every single year.
That's a good one. Yeah. Oh man, I wouldn't have thought of that.
Hit me, Brando.
Well, of course, my first thought, I'm going to something like Prisoners.
That was also up there for me as well.
Yeah, I mean, that was Denis Villeneuve. Correct?
Denis Villeneuve.
Yeah, and I'm a huge fan. He's doing Dune. I think all of his movies are great. Prisoner's a great, great movie. It gets your heart racing. You don't know what's going to happen. You're like, oh, Jake Gyllenhaal and Wolverine and all these guys. Silence of the Lambs. Classic.
Yeah.
I think that's a thriller because you got the iconic villain. Anthony Hopkins is in the movie for like 13 minutes. And he's now one of the most iconic villains of all time. Yeah. It puts you in the shoes of Clarice, a young woman who's an FBI agent. And she's
trying to make a name for herself.
And she's looked down upon, you know what I mean? So it puts you in this position of weakness, even though she's brilliant. But ultimately, I have to give it to The Fugitive with Harrison Ford.
Two Harrison Ford movies.
Harrison Ford.
Two Harrison Ford movies.
I love that grumpy old asshole. And he is a doctor whose wife was murdered.
By a one-armed man.
By a one-armed man. And the police think that he did it, and he gets arrested, and all the evidence points to him, and he gets convicted.
Yeah.
He's convicted of a murder, and he's put in prison. But while he's being transported to spend the rest of his life in prison, there's a car accident, or the bus, not a car accident, it hits a train.
Yeah.
The bus hits a train. It's amazing. It's exciting. And now he's on the run, but instead of escaping, he's like, no, I'm gonna find out who killed my wife.
Yeah.
And the whole time, Tommy Lee Jones is leading this team of police officers who are hunting him the whole time. So it's a chase. Mm-hmm. It's a run. That's why it's so exciting. There's that iconic scene where he's running through the water pipes, and he gets to a dam at the end of a dam, and he's trapped. And that's the first time Tommy Lee Jones catches up to him.
Mm-hmm.
And Harrison Ford turns around and is like, I didn't kill my wife. And he's so convincing. And he's so, and you're like, oh wow, this guy is serious. But Tommy Lee Jones goes,
I don't care.
I don't care.
Yeah.
It was so perfect. and the whole movie. And so one of the coolest things about this movie is a lot of people don't know this. They were filming this. They didn't have it completely written.
Oh, really?
And so the director worked with Tommy Lee Jones and said, hey, why don't you and all the actors you're working with and all your scenes, all the police officers, come up with your own banter.
Okay.
And do your own back and forth and have your own backstories. So the vast majority of what Tommy Lee Jones and the other police officers said was completely improv'd. And if you look at it, a lot of it is like off-topic, their backstory stuff. They're talking as if they're colleagues And they know each other, and they've been working together for like years.
That's crazy.
And none of that was written in the script. They just came off the cuff with it. It's great.
Oh man,
their dialogue is so interesting.
I mean, in that whole scene too of him jumping off the dam is iconic stuff. Oh. Yeah,
and he solves his murder in the end.
Yes, he does.
And they wanted to do it. It had to be in a public way that he confronted the killer because other people had to see it. And so they came up with the idea of confronting the killer while the killer was at a conference and he was speaking at a conference. Yeah. And they later did that again in Minority Report.
You know what's funny? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Minority Report was almost on here, but I didn't
want to. Which is another great thriller.
And sci-fi.
But it's great. It's interesting how that thriller ended the exact same way that The Fugitive did.
That's right.
I just think The Fugitive, a lot of people don't talk about that movie because it's such a 90s movie. But if you're looking at a chase. It's literally called The Fugitive. I think it's the best thriller of all time.
It's a great one.
It's exciting. 100%. It's fun. Yeah, it's fun.
It's Harrison Ford at his peak, right? I mean, he did that. He did the Jack Ryan movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Clear and Present Danger and Patriot Games.
And then Air Force One. The
90s. Get Harrison off my plane!
People don't think about Harrison Ford in the 90s.
Yeah.
What was the one that he was in? He did the Amish. He went to protect the
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Anyways, great one.
Witness protection or something.
So, yeah, The Witness. The Fugitive Witness.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
It was all those.
Yeah. So, Brando, let's keep this moving along.
All
right. So, we got a little spooky with thriller. Let's bring it down to one of my favorite genres, but is probably the most broad genre we have today.
Okay.
Dramas.
Dramas. Okay.
Yeah. Oh,
I thought you were going to say horror.
No, I mean, horror, but like anything could be a drama. Not everything could be a horror movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. It's
all right, boring. Dramas?
Yeah. It's also, if you are listening to Brando and I know we're an hour 15 in this now, and you're like, you guys sound stuffy. There's just been so much wind and everything going on. Yeah.
Last episode.
Yeah. So Brando, what to you is the greatest drama movie?
Well, I would put up, I don't know if it's underrated, but I would put The Arrival at the top with...
Jodie Foster?
Not Jodie Foster. That's Contact. That's a great movie.
Okay.
It's with Lois Lane. I can't think of her name right now.
And Jeremy Renner, right?
And Jeremy Renner. That's also a Denis Villeneuve movie.
Amy Adams.
Amy Adams. She's a great actress. Denis Villeneuve is a great director. He knows how to create that vibe, that atmosphere. Aliens Come to Earth, all this stuff. I would put that. I could say that would be the best drama. I'd say these the most emotional. That ending of that movie is such a powerful emotional gut punch. I feel more from that movie than almost any other movie I've ever watched ever.
I love that movie. I mean, Denis Villeneuve, we've gushed about him, but Dune, Blade Runner 2049, Arrival, Sicario, Enemy, Prisoners.
I would also, of course, if you're going to talk about drama, arguably one of the best movies of all time, The Godfather. You know,
that was on my list as well.
A literal masterpiece.
Yes.
Right? But I didn't want to go with it because I felt it would be too cliche or cliche because The Godfather is the top of everybody's list.
100%.
And it deserves.
Do you want to have a debate on which one's better, Godfather 1 or 2?
Yeah.
That would take 18 million podcasts
to figure
that one out.
The one I got to go with, best drama of all time, is Shawshank Redemption.
I had a feeling you were going there. That was on my list as well.
I love that movie.
It's a great one.
Oh, and I mean, you have Tim Robbins who... He goes to jail, another one going to prison for killing his wife. You don't quite know if he did it, but you think that he didn't do it. It seems like, but you don't know for sure that he didn't do it. But, and he goes there and he meets, what's his name? Why can't I think of his name?
Morgan Freeman.
And of course, Morgan Freeman is playing a character named Red, which is funny because in the original book, Shawshank Redemption, his character Red was Irish and he had red hair, and that's why they called him Red. And in the movie, he asked Morgan Freeman, he's like, "Why does everyone call you Red?" And he says, "Because I'm Irish."
Yep.
But he goes into prison, wrongly convicted, and it goes through the years of him being in prison and being friends with him. And it's this injustice, but like, we're going to spoil it, but the escape
is so good. Oh!
What was the character? The old guy, the librarian who got out early. He had been his whole life in prison.
Brooks.
And he gets out. And if you notice this, you got to watch Shawshank Redemption, but notice when Brooks is out in the real, he's the old librarian and he gets out legitimately.
Yeah, he was supposed to be a lifer.
Yeah, and he was. He was in prison for like 40 years or whatever. But he gets out If you notice, the way that's shot, every character, he's on the bus, he's working at a supermarket, mm-hmm. he's walking on the street. Every single actor and extra in that movie is looking away
from him.
No one is looking in his direction. No one is in any. Mm-hmm. And even when he's surrounded by his freedom in the city, he's completely isolated and alone, and he doesn't know how to live. Mm-hmm. And he found community and belonging in the prison in Shawshank. Yeah. Oh, that's one of the just, oh, drama. Oh, it's so good. It's so good. Shawshank Redemption, best drama of all time.
Look, I'm right there with you on it. That was on my list. I was thinking, hold on one second. My phone. Okay. So I was thinking Goodfellas was up there for me as well.
Oh, great.
I wrote down Dead Poets Society. Oh. And kept it there for a while.
Oh, Captain, My Captain.
Oh, Captain, My Captain.
Robin Williams. Robin Williams in the best drama of all time. Can you believe that?
That's insane. But so I'm not saying Dead Poets Society is mine, but it was up there.
But you can make the argument.
You can make the argument. And I will honestly say, I think everyone always talks about Good Will Hunting being Robin Williams' best drama role.
Yeah.
It's Dead Poets Society.
I agree.
100%.
Even though Good Will Hunting
Good
is
Will
amazing.
Good Will Hunting 100% has some.
Not your fault.
Yeah.
It's not your fault.
But Robin Williams. Dead Poets Society, for sure.
How about them apples?
Schindler's List, I thought about that, but I was like, I don't want to talk about Schindler's List for our last episode.
Yeah. It's great, though.
So I settled on one of my favorite movies of all time,
yeah.
Road to Perdition.
Oh, Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks, yeah. So if
and
you
did, Taylor Hoechlin, Superman.
Yeah, Taylor Hoechlin. I believe we have talked about this movie before on the podcast.
We should have.
Paul Newman as the bad guys ahead of the gangster mob.
Oh, so good.
Insane. So basically, Tom Hanks, he plays a hitman. It takes place in like the 20s or something like that.
Yeah, like during
the
30s. Or whatever,
yeah, the 30s. And he's this hitman and he's an enforcer for this mob. And he just, and like Paul Newman is essentially his dad. Not really his dad, but like has taken
he's
him
like
under
a father
his wing.
Figure for him, yeah.
That's, yeah, father figure's taken into him. And his son, Tyler Hoechlin, who is now Superman, follows him around one night and sees what his dad does for a living.
Yeah.
And then it just sets this whole entire thing to motion where now.
Well, the mobster's son decided to put a hit out on him.
Yeah.
And his family.
And his whole family.
And only his son survives.
Yeah.
And him, of course.
And him. And so it's them going on this revenge spree of like robbing banks, getting all the money and this and that. And
then getting back.
And getting back.
At the mob.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then when the scene where he finally confronts. What's his name?
Paul Newman.
Paul Newman. I was thinking the salad dressing.
Yeah. Paul Newman's ranch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When he confronts that bottle of salad dressing.
Yeah.
On
the Thousand Islands.
That scene is amazing though. Yeah. Like in the rain, at night, in the streets.
And remember too, in that scene, they cut out the sound.
That's right.
So it's just them walking and you just the rain and all the stuff, and you just hear you see the flashes of the gun.
Yeah.
And Tom Hanks mows everybody down besides Paul Newman. They have this last exchange and he just kills them.
And it has such a bittersweet ending.
Yeah.
I mean, they make it to that beach house and his son is there.
And
his son makes
it. Jude Law is in it and he's creepy.
Oh yeah. He's like the like insane.
Yeah.
Like psychopath.
Yeah. Like takes pictures of like everybody he murders and probably jacks off to them.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie.
But the confrontation, the, you know, Tom Hanks good at what he does.
Yeah.
But he's
and
like
Daniel Craig. That's right. Daniel Craig was the son.
He was the son. Yeah. He was the idiot son. Yeah. Who was just, yeah. But like, the confrontation. That's the thing. When the characters clash in that movie, it's great.
Great. Yeah.
Every time these two characters in a room together, oh, you know it's going to be
and,
great.
And, you know, so we are going to do crime, and I thought about putting it there, and it is somewhat of a thriller, but I'm like, ultimately, at the end of the day, like, oh, I also thought maybe, like, There Will Be Blood. That was almost on there for me.
That's a great movie.
Great movie, but, like, that one is...
I drink.
I also thought No Country for Old Men.
Oh, Anton Chigurh?
Yeah. Oh.
One of the scariest villains of all time.
He's so deadpan. But yeah. Road to Perdition, like I keep saying with all my other movies, there's just, like... this force that kept pulling me towards this. And honestly, I can't believe how good this movie
is. Well, you know what does it for me is you put on that hat and that trench coat with a Tommy gun. There's just something
Tom Hanks with a Tommy gun.
Oh, there's something iconic just about that imagery. I just love it. I can't get enough of that.
I'm with you on it. So let's keep moving on to comedies. Now let's laugh a little bit.
Best comedies
of
all time.
So, you know, honestly, I've been on a Jim Carrey kick.
Okay.
And I was thinking about putting Jim Carrey, you know, the Mask, Dumb and Dumber on there, something like that. Ace Ventura as well could be on there.
Nice.
But I couldn't because there was one particular movie that I just I wanted to break so hard.
Yeah.
And choose this movie, and that was Tommy Boy.
Tommy Boy!
Do you get the break now? Because he sells brake pads.
I get it.
So Tommy Boy.
Richard! What did you do? I say that to my wife at least once a month.
I am your father. Oh, look at this mini fridge. You can fit a 6-pack of soda in there. Tommy Boy is, to me, the best comedy of all time.
Yeah.
You have David Spade and Chris Farley,
which was such
a dynamic duo. And unfortunately, Chris Farley died very young due to, I believe, he OD'd.
Yeah, I'm sure it was something related to that. Yeah.
And but this movie, I mean, it's just, it's quotable, it's funny, it's feel good, right? Because it's like a father-son connecting, but then he dies, so he's trying to take the mantle of his father. And David Spade is really the one that should be running the company because he's been working like the straight man. Yeah.
He's like the normal guy, and which is funny because David Spade's the normal guy, and Chris Farley's the crazy, wacky guy.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Oh, and they do it perfectly. Oh, it's done so perfectly.
There's so many iconic...
Janine Garofalo's
in it. Yeah. Bo Derek...
Oh, yeah.
Bo Derek is the love interest of the father in it. What's his name?
Of course, Dan Aykroyd.
Dan Aykroyd's in it. The most beautiful man ever. What's his name?
That's about Brando?
No, not Brando.
Brad Pitt?
No, not Brad Pitt. His brother. Brothers don't shake hands. Brothers hug.
What's his name?
I don't remember at all.
In Tommy Boy?
His brother. The guy that... Oh, my dear God. Why can I not?
Oh, this is going to bother me.
Yeah.
We're going to spend the rest of our last episode
finding this out.
Tommy Boy. This is Chris Farley's brother.
Yeah. His fake brother that is in love with.
Like Fabio?
No.
Who's the most beautiful man of all time?
George Rob Clooney.
Rob Lowe.
Oh, yeah. There it is. He's not on the Tommy Boy.
He's literally the best looking man ever.
I literally had to Google Chris Traeger to find out his name because he's not on the cast list on IMDb
Rob,
for some reason.
How did I forget that?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But it's like there's so many great lines in it where it's like there's like the girl that's like swimming by herself and David Spade's like looking at her.
Oh, yeah.
Fat guy in a little coat.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, oh, what is it? Buddy Wackett? Yeah.
Oh, what a
room service!
Choice.
Room service. You want a fresh pillow? You want me to check you off?
Yeah, exactly. He's like, what?
What type of hotel is this?
Yeah. Oh, that's a great pick. Oh.
You know, it doesn't really hurt right here, or like right here, but like right here. Oh, it's and he's like the chicken wings. It's just everything about this movie. It's feel good. It's funny. It's too. People connecting and becoming best friends. There's a little bit of a love story in it.
And the story of him stepping up and becoming a grown-up and taking over his dad's company. You know, even the story's got a feel-good thing.
You know, yeah. I could get a good look at a T-bone by sticking my head up a bull's ass, but would you rather take the butcher's word for it?
when he's going to these investor meetings, and he is not the kind of person you want in an investor meeting.
No, I could get a good look at a T-bone by sticking my head up the butcher's ass, but wouldn't you? No, wait. Tommy Boy's it. It's my favorite comedy. I can watch that thing 18 million times over.
For me, I could almost put any Adam Sandler movie.
I'm
like Happy Gilmore is something I'm quoting all the time. You know,
you blew it.
What are you looking at, Schwan?
What are you looking at, Schwan?
Shampoo is better. It needs to have silky and smooth.
Well, that's not Happy Gilmore.
Oh, that's
Billy Madison.
Billy Madison.
I think You Blew It is Billy Madison too, though.
Yeah,
I can't remember.
But like. It informs
the price
so
is wrong,
much,
Bobby.
It informs so much of my humor when I was younger. So I a lot of Adam Sandler. I could go that route. I could say something like Anchorman. I love Anchorman. I love his, Will Ferrell's, like, he does his character.
Yes.
And I just thought it was the funniest thing ever.
Step Brothers.
You put a big mustache on him, and I just think it's hilarious. And then you had, like, Steve Carell was in that movie, too. You had a ton of, like, really funny people.
Paul Rudd
was in the movie, you know. The woman from Married with Children, who
Christina Applegate.
I'm so bad with names.
Yeah, but, I mean, and Ben Stiller, Vince Vaughn, like all these cameos.
Yeah. So you could easily say one of those, and I would say yes. But for this one, I got to give best comedy of all time to Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
You know, buddy, I was really hoping you'd say that.
I love that movie. I might have watched that movie more than I've watched any movie ever. I did in high school. I was in a competitive acting group, and it was a partnership, and you had to act out a scene. And it was competitive. We traveled to different schools, and we acted out our scenes on stage in front of like judges stuff. Right?
You're such a nerd.
And me and my partner did when the French at the French guy.
I should dunk you a second time.
I fart in your general direction.
Your father smells of elderberries.
Oh, and then it's like, and also the peasants when they're like, we live in a sort of anarcho-syndicalistic commune. It's like, well, who are you? Yeah. I'm your king. Well, I didn't vote for you. Well, you don't vote for kings.
Or like the fact they couldn't afford horses in it. So they did the coconut thing as a joke and they laughed and like, well, that's it.
Well, they couldn't figure out how to end the movie. And they didn't have enough money to do something like a big grand ending. This is Sir Arthur, King Arthur and the knights on the quest. And so it had to have some big ending. And it didn't. It just stopped. The police showed up.
And arrested him for murder.
Arrested him and told him they had to stop filming. Yeah. And the movie ended.
I chopped your bloody leg off. I've had worse.
It's
just a flesh wound.
You know, we are the knights of Nih. We need shrubbery.
Are no longer the knights who say ni. We are now the knights who say icky icky womba.
The Black Knight, you know, it's like, oh, it's just a flesh wound. You know,
what is your favorite color?
Yeah. Oh, the troll, the bridge troll. You know. Yep. What is the airspeed velocity of a swallow? African or European?
Well, I don't know. Just, what is your favorite? Blue? No, green.
and they die.
Some call me Tim.
Was that the wizard?
That's
right?
The wizard Tim. Yeah.
Oh, it's just it's the funniest movie of all time. I think it's
you're not wrong.
And here's the thing: I don't really like comedies. I don't like watching comedies. A lot of movies don't make me laugh.
Yeah. That's so weird about you.
And I don't know why, because I like to laugh and I like to be funny.
Because you're conceited and you think you're better than them.
I think I'm the funniest person. I think I'm funnier than all the movies, except for Monty Python.
Yeah, I get that.
Best comedy of all time, man.
Oh, man, you're not wrong. I
love how we didn't even talk about the movie. We just quoted it.
Quoted the entire time. You know, honestly, I almost put Christmas Vacation on this one, too, for me.
Love it.
Yeah. Well, Brando.
Elf is another Elf. One, just because all God. The quotes you get out of it. And that's what makes a great comedy is when you can quote it years later and you're still laughing at it. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, he's an angry elf.
Say elf one more time. All right. Let's move it to something a little bit more scary now.
All right.
And let's get into horror movies.
Horror movies.
Horror movies.
You want me to go first?
Yes, go for it.
My favorite scary thing is The Haunting of Hill House.
It's on Netflix.
Yeah. It's not a movie. It's a 10-episode series by Mike Flanagan. I think Mike Flanagan's brilliant. Everything he does is great.
And is that the same guy that did The Midnight Mass?
He did Midnight Mass.
Yeah, which
he
was
did,
great.
The Fall of the House of Usher. He's done movies. He's done a bunch of movies too. Like, what's the one with the mirror? I can't remember the name of it, but he's done a lot of great stuff. But The Haunting of Hill House is my favorite scary thing of all time. But it's not a movie. It's a 10-episode show. Of course, you could go with things like The Exorcist.
Yes,
where like this is iconic. This is cultural, and it's scary. Like,
yes,
and it brought exorcisms and demonic possession back into like the cultural zeitgeist.
Yes.
I think you can make an argument for Alien. Being the best horror movie of all time.
Okay.
I think you can make an argument for Alien being the best movie of all time.
Okay.
I love Alien. But for best horror movie of all time. All
right.
I have to go with Jurassic Park.
Oh, you're so weird. Oh, I don't like that.
It's
I would put that more as a thriller than a horror movie.
It's a monster movie. It's a monster movie where the monsters are eating people throughout the whole movie. It's a classic horror movie.
You.
But because Steven Spielberg did it and it's so beautiful, and it has John Williams doing the score, so it sounds so wonderful that he slipped a horror movie in front of all of us and we didn't even notice.
Oh, you're so right. I hate this.
Those velociraptors? Those things are scary.
No, the moment you justified it that it was a monster movie and the monsters are eating the kids, I was like, yeah, that's a horror movie.
Yeah, it's a horror movie. And they have to escape and they're running away.
Wait, oh my gosh.
Yeah, the T-Rex, I mean, it just...
The graphics still hold up today. I don't know how.
1993, and it still looks good. What?
Yeah.
How did you do that?
It is insane.
I had to have a Steven Spielberg movie on my list, though.
Yeah, that's fair.
I love Steven Spielberg.
Well, you did Indiana Jones.
Yeah, but, you know, I had to have more.
Oh, okay. You know, you're not wrong. I mean, you got so many iconic scenes from it. I mean, Jeff Goldblum in it is...
Classic.
The Life Finds a Way speech.
That's a big pile of shit.
That's a big pile of shit. Yeah.
Dino DNA.
I mean, Samuel Jackson's in it for a little bit.
Hold on to your butts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't say the magic word.
I mean, the reveal of the T-Rex when he breaks out and attacks them in the two trucks, that scene is so scary and it's so cool.
The eyeball.
Oh.
You know, like all of a sudden just the eyeball and it's a T-Rex is like, whoa.
Yeah. It's scary.
Yeah.
I saw this in theaters as a kid.
Same.
And I turned to my mom and I was like, can we leave? I'm too scared. I told her I was too scared.
What?
And she was like, well, see if you can stay. And I was like, okay. Like she shamed me. She shamed
Good.
Me. And I'm glad I stayed because the movie's great.
It's insane.
But
good.
It scared the crap out of me, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So is it my turn?
In fact, I will say that last thing I'll say.
Okay.
I think the Jurassic World movies, the reason why they're not as good
is because they're not scary.
It's because they've moved away from their horror movie roots and they made it an adventure fun movie.
100% agree with you on it.
Yeah.
So this one was hard for me. Like everybody knows, I love my 90s slashers.
Yeah.
Like Scream, I Know What You Did Last Summer. I love my 80s slashers, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street. I love my 70s Grindhouse, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and things like that. I love my Rob Zombie. I love M. Night Shyamalan, like Signs.
Yeah.
And so... This was the hardest genre
because
the horror is arguably my favorite genre of movies.
And there's so many ones.
Yeah. Event Horizon.
Oh yeah.
But I was like, I don't want to talk about a movie like that bloody and gory. Because, like, Event Horizon is...
There's some scenes. Yeah.
It is disturbing.
Yeah.
It is disturbing.
The spaceship literally goes to hell.
Yes.
That's how it travels faster than light. It went through another dimension.
But, Brando, you guessed it in your speech, and it is Alien.
Yes!
So, and it's in the first episode of Banter and Such ever, you said Alien was one of your favorite movies, top three favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
And so, there's a reason why that I say Alien is the best horror movie of all time.
Oh, nice.
No other movie has built the monster that well. I'm not talking just in looks, but in creepiness and as well, you don't see the monster for so much of the movie.
That's how you do a horror movie.
It is, you're like, all of a sudden, like, you know, it comes bursting out of his chest. There's you don't expect that coming.
The chest burster scene is incredible.
Yes.
There's nothing like that in any other movie. Yeah.
Then all of a sudden you realize one of the guys is an android and tries to kill Sigourney Weaver.
Oh, that's right.
But it is the fact that the xenomorph, even when it is fully adulted, I don't know what its
like
final
fully
form.
Yeah, fully
You still don't see a whole lot of it.
In the shadows.
Always in the shadows, the silhouette. Like even in the vent scene, you just the arms reach out.
The jazz hands.
Jazz hands. And that's it.
Yeah.
And that makes the movie so much more terrifying than any of these other wannabe monster movies
that
come out, I would say, in the past 3 decades.
Stop doing this big CGI like dance that we're seeing here. Like, no, just he's
I
hidden.
Don't want to see the monster.
Yeah, he can be anywhere.
Yeah.
He can be anywhere. You don't need to see him all the time. Just little glimpses.
Yeah.
And that's terrifying.
Yes.
Oh.
Build the mystery. Like, that's what's missing from a lot of horror movies these days, is I want the mystery of what is this thing. So my runner-up that I kept going back and forth from, and we talked about it on the podcast as well, I think it was Holly or either Brittany, but we talked about The Lady in Black.
Yes.
With Daniel Radcliffe.
I love that
right?
movie.
Okay, so that's another one. Horror. Victorian horror. Builds the suspense. It's weird. It's creepy. Yeah. It's scary. And there are some pop-out scares, but it's more, it builds.
The vibe.
Like, yeah, like it is a slow incline up, but it gets creepier as the movie goes along. I mean, we have to give it to some Alfred Hitchcock. Like he was the master of horror, not because things were scary, but he knew how to build tension so well. That's why
the master.
Alien and a lot of the M. Night Shyamalan, early M. Night Shyamalan stuff, and like the Lady in Black, all of those are attributed to Hitchcock because they built the tension like Hitchcock did.
And less is more in the horror genre.
Yeah.
Like less, like with action, show. Like
I want everything.
Put your camera on a tripod, sit still, and let me see everything. Horror, it's the exact opposite. I was going to put Paranormal Activity. I was thinking that one too.
That's a great one too.
And like nothing happens. Like a door closes.
Nope.
But it's so scary. It's so good. That just less is more, man.
What's the Blair Witch Project?
Oh, yeah. Atmosphere. Is everything for me, man.
You know, it's funny as you talk about action movies like that, too. I want to see everything. I almost put Bourne Identity as my action movie.
Yep.
But I couldn't because it created the shaky cam close-up, which Bourne Identity did really well. But all the movies that try to do it afterwards, it's, fast cut, shaky. No, I don't want
that. That was a plague on Hollywood. Yes. It was shaky cam.
Cam, 100%. Oh, man. All right. Moving along here, we're going to go to crime movies.
Crime. All right.
And this one, I'm going to throw you for a little bit of a loop, but it is my favorite crime movie of all time. Now, of course, you can go the Ocean's movies.
Yeah, Ocean's 11.
Right, Ocean's 11.
The heist.
The heist crime movies.
Well, that's a great subgenre of this.
Yes.
Because you could do that by itself. Yes, a heist movie.
It's a crime movie, right? Yeah. Well, once again, we talked about, Goodfellas, Godfather, any of the mobster movies, right? Could be crime movies. The Untouchables. You could do a police one, right? Because that's crime. Yeah. But my favorite crime movie of all time is Baby Driver.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a great pick.
Right?
Oh,
right?
Yes.
Like, you don't think of it as a crime movie, but the entire movie is them heisting things and driving away from them.
Yeah, it is a heist movie.
It's a heist movie.
And they're all criminals.
Yes. Doing crime.
Oh.
So
directed by Edgar Wright.
Oh, that's right. That is an Edgar Wright movie.
And the movie is synchronized to the music.
Yes, it is.
Oh, it's so good. It's got that fast... Like zip cuts and all that,
bell
fast
bottoms,
zooms.
Bell bottoms.
Oh,
yeah.
So that movie is so good. And nobody talks about that movie. It's so good.
Every single time, like I'm at a restaurant or a bar and it just happens to be on the TV, I'm stuck at that restaurant or bar to that movie ends.
Yes.
I was at Rose Pepper a couple months back and they just had it on the background and I literally sat there. I had two meals because I finished the movie. Like, I was like, I had a big appetizer and I was like, well, I'm going to be here and like waited and like four margaritas, a couple shots. Like it was great. But Baby Driver is so good because it takes the crime genre and kind of flips it around a little bit. It's not satirical.
No, it's not.
It's not satirical, which I didn't want. Like I said, I couldn't do a satirical movie of it, of one of the genres. But it's so good. It's over the top. The action in it's great. The driving's in it great. The acting in it's fantastic.
Oh, the car chase scenes are amazing.
I cannot believe that they were able to achieve the things that they were able to achieve with the cars in it. Like, it is unreal.
It's so cool.
Yeah, what they were able to do with it. I mean, say what you will. I know Kevin Spacey is weird, but, like, he does a great job in it. The fact that like it's a love story, there's multiple love stories taking place in this movie, and that culminates in this final fight scene to Queen.
Yeah, oh yeah,
right.
And it's unexpected who the main villain is.
Yeah,
too. You think it's somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, you think it's Jamie Foxx. But it's not. It's
John Hamm.
John Hamm. Yeah.
And his hamaconda.
Yeah, he has a big penis.
Yes, apparently a huge dick, and they call it the hamaconda. But yeah, I was going back and forth. And like I said, I had so many great movies I could put in there.
Everyone
that would
needs
fit
to watch
the genre
this.
A little bit more tightly. I'd say,
and it's exciting.
Yeah,
my favorite part is when he says he told the guy that to do this heist, they were all going to wear Mike Myers masks.
Oh, yeah.
And thinking like Halloween, Mike Myers killers.
Nope.
Michael Myers, but he comes out with Mike Myers, the actors. And it's like, he's got the, what's his character
Austin Powers.
Austin Powers mask that they put on. And they had to do the whole heist in Austin Powers mask.
But I mean, it's good at building tension as well. Like it's a great movie.
And there's even stuff like, if you notice in the background, a lot of TV stuff, there are the lines set on the TV that Baby, the main character, because he's kind of socially he's very shy.
He was
introverted.
In a car accident or something when he was a kid, and so he has like tinnitus.
And tinnitus.
Tinnitus.
Yeah, and so he doesn't engage socially well. Mm-hmm. But throughout the movie, he hears things on TVs, lines that he says later on. And he gets a lot of his lines.
Oh, really?
I guess I have to watch it again. Yeah. Oh, no.
A lot of his lines are things he heard earlier.
Oh, my gosh. That's fantastic.
Okay, so give me
your crime.
Crime movies.
Give me some of your contenders first, obviously.
Well, I would put one of them up there as Gone Girl, I think is a great crime movie.
Okay.
Because that one is like very disturbing. And that's David Fincher, who is another one of my favorite directors.
Oh, that's right. That is a Fincher movie.
And I almost went with that just because I love David Fincher so much. Because
Ben Affleck is fantastic in it.
Oh, and the whole and
Neil Patrick Harris.
To the true crime, as popular as that is now.
Was that Rosamund Pike?
Yeah. Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, Rosamund Pike as the
Gone Girl?
The wife. Yeah, the Gone Girl.
Yeah, Rosamund Pike. Yeah.
The story, the twist, the surprises, you don't see anything coming in that whole movie. Yeah. And then when things happen, you're like, oh my God.
What?
You could have gone with The Departed.
You know, that was on the list too.
Martin Scorsese. Yeah. You can even make the argument for that being one of the best movies of all time. But for me, best crime movie of all time, I'm thinking, just to give context, I'm thinking crime involves like detectives and a mystery, you know, detective, especially the detective. I love the noir detective. I love that stuff. So with that in mind, I think the best crime movie of all time is Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
I knew a twist was coming. When you started talking about Detective New, I was like, no, he's going to give me something weird.
It is.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
It is so good. It leans into every single detective noir cliche with a twist on it that is so funny and so
I thought clever. You were like, for a second, I thought you were going to say like 1990s Batman, like the
I
thought you were going to go something like there.
No, I just think Who Framed Roger Rabbit and on a technical level, like to put these animated characters in a live action movie, they don't cut any corners. They do everything the hard way, and every subtle detail is in the background, and you don't notice any of it, but your brain does, and you put together. They have Daffy Duck. This is, I think, it's the only movie ever where Roger Rabbit and Mickey Mouse are in a scene together.
Oh,
this is when Disney was weak. This was before the Disney Renaissance.
Yeah, that's right. This is 1988.
And so they loaned out Mickey to be in this movie. So So Mickey Mouse and Roger Rabbit, they had to be in the movie for the exact same amount of time, and they had to have the exact same number of lines.
Oh my gosh, that's insane.
But there's Daffy Duck, there's Yosemite Sam, there's
Christopher
Betty Boop,
Lloyd, isn't it? Is Judge Doom.
Oh, Christopher Lloyd is the villain. Oh, he's so good.
I would highly suggest, if you can, on YouTube, you can see the behind the scenes for Who Framed Roger Rabbit and see how they did all this stuff, because they did a great job of, with the animated characters, still having the world interact with them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's like all this stuff with like puppeteering or like sticks and like all this weird stuff. Like, you don't realize it, but there's a scene when what's the guy's main character? Well, the main character's name in that. Eddie,
the grizzled, hard drinking detective. A toon killed his brother. Dropped a piano on his head.
He is trying to.
That's why he hates toon. Dropped a piano on his head.
He's trying to hide Roger Rabbit in the sink.
Yes.
And there's a time where Roger Rabbit comes up and spits water at him.
Yeah.
But that's animated, but they got it right. And so he actually gets water put on. Yeah, it's insane.
I think the beginning of that scene is they're handcuffed together.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie is handcuffed. Eddie, a person, an actor, is handcuffed to Roger Rabbit, and they're in this room, and they're moving around, and Roger's jerking, and he's bumping into the lights, and he's making the light move, and he's running into things. It is so technically brilliant.
Yes.
Plus, it's funny, man.
It's a good movie.
It is so funny.
I haven't watched it in a while. I need to rewatch it.
Best crime movie
of all time.
Better than The Departed.
Oh, my God. This is why the podcast is ending. It's antics like this. Oh, my dear
it's
God.
My list. It's,
and I'm proud of it, damn it.
It can be whatever I want.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Let's move it to my second favorite category of movies ever.
Ooh. Well, we only have two left, right?
Yeah, westerns.
Ooh, westerns. All right, who do you want to go first?
You can go first.
Westerns is, there's There's a lot. This genre used to be huge, but it's not that big anymore. Yeah, huge.
Huge. You know it. He knows it. Everybody knows it.
I actually think, okay, so you have True Grit. I love True Grit.
Great one.
Jeff Bridges.
The original's better.
I actually like the Jeff Bridges one better.
Jeff Bridges, that mumble.
I love the mumble. I love Jeff Bridges.
I do too, but that, yeah.
And it's got the girl in it who was in
Haley Steinfeld?
Haley Steinfeld, yeah, who was
Pitch Perfect.
Yeah.
And
but she's what's Hawkeye's sidekick.
Yep.
In the Hawkeye show.
Yeah, the Purple Arrow.
And everyone knew she was gonna be huge after that. She was like, she was very young in
very,
movie.
Very young, yeah.
But great, great. You could say Unforgiven. Oh, man, yeah. I think it's the best Clint Eastwood movie. I mean, you gotta talk about Clint Eastwood.
Yes.
When talking about 100%. Right. But it's the cliche, he's older. He's been in these Westerns, other movies, and he's the gunslinger, and he's killing all these people. But in Unforgiven, he's broken, man.
He's old. And he's old. That movie came out in 1990, or 94.
The weight of this violence has weighed him down, but he's got to get out there and go one last time.
1992. You watch that movie, and you're like, oh, Clint Eastwood's old, and he's still alive.
It's got great scenes of people.
Another great Morgan Freeman movie, too.
People look scowling at each other. Yeah. Oh, it's great. But for me, and I think I wonder if we're going to have the same movie, because I got to say the best Western of all time.
I highly doubt we have the same movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought we would, but I have to give it to Tombstone.
I knew you were going to say it, and we do not have the same movie.
Tombstone is the best.
Yes.
Western.
Yes.
Val Kilmer with every single line.
I'll be a Huckleberry.
Oh, I'm your Huckleberry.
Oh, you're probably too drunk. You're seeing two of me.
Yeah. And he was like, well, I was just playing around.
I got one pistol for each of you.
Yeah. He's like, well, I was just playing around. I wasn't.
And I wasn't.
Oh, and he's deadly.
You're
he's
not
scared.
Wearing a bustle.
And Kurt Russell as like the hero, the classic hero who just wants to retire and live his life in peace, but he keeps
can't.
Being. Yeah. I can't.
Can't.
Oh, and
I'm coming and hell's coming with me.
Ooh. Oh, the villains are great. Yep. They're chewing this. Every line in this movie is amazing.
Yes.
You got to watch Tombstone if you haven't seen it. If you have seen it, go watch it again. Yes. Wow, that's a great movie.
It's a perfect movie. I struggled so hard not putting Tombstone on, but
I thought you would pick Tombstone as your best.
Yeah.
I thought this would be the one where we'd have the same movie.
I was close too. I really was close. But It's just why, like you said, you couldn't put Departed as like a crime movie, right? Yeah. Like it's so iconic. And yes, obviously Tombstone is the greatest Western ever made.
Yeah.
But this is very much similar to me, like with horror movies where they're like either they're done well, or they're like there is far more really shitty Western movies, like really, really bad Western movies, than there are good ones.
Yeah, I think a Western's hard to do right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So my mind, obviously, you know, like you said, Clint Eastwood, Good and the Bad, the Ugly, Fistful of Dollars, Few Dollars More, The Pale Rider, Hang 'Em High.
Oh,
you know, there's so many great Clint Eastwood ones. John Wayne, I think The Gunslinger, which was his final movie, which was very similar to Unforgiven. He's the bad guy in it, though, and he's dying of cancer, which, funny enough, John Wayne was dying of cancer at the time filming.
What's the one that, was it The Searcher or The Searchers? The one where he goes out, he's looking for the girl who's kidnapped by the natives.
I can't remember the name of that one.
I'm blanking.
The Cowboys, yeah. Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, all great stuff. I thought about maybe going to like a newer one, right? Like 3:10 to Yuma by James Mangold.
Great one.
Open Range with Kevin Costner and Robert Duvall, also another great one. Hell or High Water.
Yeah, neo-western.
Neo-western. Hell or High Water is a Western movie. Yeah. I don't care what people say.
They wear cowboy hats and cowboy boots.
And they're robbing banks.
Right? It's very dusty.
Yes, it is a Western movie.
Hell or High Water is a great movie.
It's a great one.
Yes. And Jeff Bridges.
He's
the
too.
Lawman.
Ben Foster.
Yeah, Ben Foster. Oh, yeah.
Chris Pine.
Chris great. Pine. Yeah. Captain Kirk. Great oh, Captain, movie. My Captain. That's it.
This is the one, though, that I had to go with the best Western of all time.
Yeah.
Hands down. You cannot argue with me.
Yeah.
Is High Noon.
Nice.
So OG 1952.
Old school.
Old school. This movie, High Noon, I'm not talking about the Seltzers, is, I am not kidding you, where all the tropes come from.
Yeah.
This movie created, right? There's tons of Western movies before this, but this movie created all the tropes that you see in every single great Western movie.
What time did you say? 54?
52.
52. So this is the height of the popularity too, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is, it's still black and white. There's no color to it.
Yeah.
And it's very similar, right? So there's a town marshal, and he's played by Gary Cooper.
Oh, yeah.
Marshal Will Kane.
That makes me think of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, how he's kind of like hearkening back to the old school black and white Westerns. Yeah.
So, and he gets married to this younger lady named Grace Kelly, and it starts at their wedding. And they get married, and he's about to go and live his life. He's retired, right? But then all suddenly, like while he's about to, right before he's about to leave, he hears that this old rival of his is coming back into town. He arrested him for murder, sent him up north, and he was supposed to be hung and die. But he's coming back on the high noon train. So he's getting back into town at noon, and he struggles with him. He's like, I'm retired now. I want to go live my life with my wife.
I love it.
But the new marshal doesn't come in to replace me till tomorrow. So he struggles with, do I leave? Do I not leave? Yeah. I can't, like, I'm retired, but I can't leave my town that, like, I've sworn to protect, like, alone in this. And what's great about the movie is it takes place in real time.
Whoa, really? Right, see, I've never seen this. I love this.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the movie starts at, like, 10:43.
Oh, and it takes you to high noon.
And it takes you to high noon.
Oh, that's cool.
Something like that. And so there's a couple times that they keep looking at the clock and you realize, like, it's not technically, like, minute for minute or, like, second for second, but it's pretty close to, the movie is, like, 120 minutes, and the whole scene of the movie is about 130 minutes long. Because then he does arrive at high noon, but then there's, like, a 10-minute battle scene afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, like, him and he's alone. The townspeople aren't really going to help him. And he's trying to fight now. It's 4v1. So he's like, has to use his knowledge of the town to try to like sneak around and eventually like does the whole like quick draw thing against the main villain. Lee Van Cleef is in it. It's like one of the villains, like the henchmen in it. I mean, Ronald Reagan, say what you want, but like, this is what his favorite Western of all time as well. It's the iconic. Yeah. I wanted to do The Good and the Bad and the Ugly as well. Sergio Leone, you know, Clint Eastwood, Lee Van Cleef is in that as well. I wanted to, but I was texting my brother.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, I need help. And I was like, we're doing the best Western of all time. And I said, I don't want to do Tombstone. And we talked about the Sergio Leone trilogy. And I was like, man, I was like, yeah. He goes, why don't you just say High Noon? I was like, there it is. It's High Noon. Like, it had to be that. So 100%.
And I know you're a big fan of Westerns in general.
Yes. Like, my second favorite genre of movies.
Yeah.
I grew up watching them. I mean, there's a reason why I moved to Nashville. I know most of them take place in Texas, but whatever. But yeah, it's just.
We ain't got no cowboys in Tennessee.
Not anymore, at least. It's just great. It's fantastic. And as well, like, I know we talk a lot about older movies not being paced so well. Like, we've done a lot better job of storytelling.
Yeah.
This movie does not feel like it was made in 1952.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. I feel you on that. I get that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like a different, some movies of that era have a different sensibility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Almost a little more quaint.
Yeah. I mean, still the cinematography and a lot of the stuff happens. You know, it's 1952, but the pacing of it is a lot better than most movies.
Well, I haven't seen it. Now I got to see it.
Yeah. Definitely watch it.
All right. We're going to go to your favorite genre of all time.
No, we already did horror. Horror, then Western.
Oh, horror's your favorite.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, you know,
our final genre,
we had to close it out with superheroes.
We started.
We've majority done of our so episodes much. Have been on superhero movies. Yeah. So, Brando, I'll let you kick us off.
Oh, okay.
What is the best superhero movie of all time? I wonder if we have the same movie.
I don't think we do.
Okay.
There are some great superhero movies. Of course, you have Superman the movie with Christopher Reeve.
Yep, the old school ones.
You know, the tagline, You'll Believe a Man Can Fly. Mm-hmm. That was the first movie to take superheroes seriously, that this is not just a children's cartoon.
It wasn't Batman dancing to disco.
Exactly, exactly. It wasn't goofy and silly.
The shark repellent bat spray.
They were taking this concept seriously. It's a classic. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
There's some stuff in it that doesn't... It, arrive with our sensibilities, but still, just watch it for what it is. It's a great movie. I think, you know, you can make the argument for The Dark Knight. That was my first thought.
Yeah.
Because I was like, The Dark Knight is, it is a masterpiece.
Yes, it is.
It is a perfect movie from start to finish. Mm-hmm. The only reason I didn't go with The Dark Knight is because it's not super, like, comic booky.
Okay. You know?
It's almost like Law & Order, Gotham.
Yeah.
Which is not bad.
No, not at all.
It's great. You got movies like Logan. Logan is an amazing movie. It's incredible. Yep. I thought you were going to say that for the Westerns almost.
Oh, yeah, I was close to saying that.
But I have to give this one to Avengers Infinity War.
Infinity War. Wow, not Endgame.
I debated between that and Endgame because I think it could easily go to Endgame because the reason was the reason this makes it the best superhero movie of all time is because everything it represents, this is the culmination of a like 15-year, like so ambitious that the Marvel Cinematic Universe, they invented the concept of a cinematic universe.
Yes.
And they were reaching for the stars. They were
and they got there.
And they did it.
Yeah.
They did it. They made all of these movies, so many movies interconnected. The movies individually, at their worst, are still fun and good.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
At their best are some of the best movies ever. And it culminated with it's for comic to see this in comic books,
mm-hmm.
it's so complex and you have to have so many moving parts and so many different creative people. It's just impossible to pull off. And to do that in movies where it's 10 times as complex,
mm-hmm.
and they pulled it off.
Yep.
And all of these characters, I'd even say with Endgame, I might even need to say Endgame just because the way they end these characters, like Tony Stark
and Captain America.
The death of Tony Stark, the essential retirement of Captain America,
mm-hmm.
so heart-wrenching because you've been with these characters for so many movies, for so many years. We've never, ever had a movie experience like this. I think, and I think the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is this generation's Star Wars.
For sure.
It's a cultural phenomenon. People will be talking about this for decades and decades and decades. The generation that comes after Gen Z mm-hmm. is going to be absolutely sick of us talking about
it. Oh, 100%.
Because we're going to have all the tattoos. And we're gonna have all, and they're going to be like, oh, shut up. But you
we
know what?
We get it. You're a nerd.
But you know what? We were there for it. And it changed the world. And we had never seen anything like that before. It was amazing. Avengers. I'm going to go with Infinity War just because I think of the two, which is a two-parter, I think Infinity War is just a little bit more fun. But yeah, best superhero movie of all time.
Oh wow. Okay. I mean, I can't disagree with you on this.
Yeah.
Like I 100% either Infinity War or Endgame, the culmination, like you said, of all that time spent into it, all the man hours, it is insane. Not every single movie that got us there was great.
Yeah.
But majority of them were good. So
and some of them were great.
Some of them were great.
Yeah.
So with me, I immediately, you know, being the Batman fan that I am, I immediately went to, you know, the 1990 Batman and Batman Returns. 89 Batman.
Batman Returns.
Great ones. I went to the original X-Men trilogy and Spider-Man 2.
That could have been,
100%. You know, I thought, funny enough, there's this superhero movie that not a whole lot of people know about, and it has Chris Evans in it. It's called Pusher.
Yes.
Weird movie that came out in like mid-2000s.
Is it like Dakota Fanning also or something like that?
I don't think it was Dakota Fanning. I think, yeah, she might have been in it. It's been a while since I've seen it, and I really like that. It's like mutants and stuff like that. Then, you know, so I really struggled with this. But Brando, you guessed my movie.
Yeah.
And it's Logan.
Logan, I knew it. I know, because that was almost mine.
It is, because here's my thing, like, I feel bad saying it, Logan, because it's the most anti-superhero movie that's ever been made.
But it's a superhero movie.
But it is a superhero movie. It is a Western.
Yeah.
So I could have put it in there.
It's a neo-Western,
but it's James Mangold. I mean, it's Sir Patrick Stewart.
Oh, the father-son relationship
between him and Logan.
So heart-wrenching.
Look, I know Patrick Stewart is an amazing actor.
Yeah.
I can't think of a bad role that I've seen him in. I mean, he hasn't done a whole lot besides, you know,
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
I don't
Captain
know what that was.
Jean-Luc, that's an old Star Trek meme.
Oh,
that's
really? Okay.
Where they just put someone's line to music. And
gotcha. Okay.
You're that, a man now, dog.com.
Professor X. Yeah. I'm going to skip you here.
Okay, sorry. That's old millennial
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. But he... amazing, like brings tears to my eyes every single time I watch that movie. Yeah. Like how good he is, Hugh Jackman. Whoever thought that Hugh Jackman alone could put in that much emotion yeah. into an emotionless character?
Yeah,
the only emotion Wolverine ever feels is anger.
Yeah,
he just wants to murder everybody.
Yeah, Wolverine's just an asshole.
Yeah, yeah. And just to watch Hugh Jackman portray that role yeah. so well,
the pain. And the confusion and the anger and it was beautiful.
Just wanting to die.
Yeah.
But he couldn't.
Yeah.
Because he had obligations. But he's just like, he had the adamantium bullet. He wanted to pull the trigger. Oh, like,
that's right. Yeah.
You know, and all that stuff. And as well, I know we talked about Logan before, but like one of my favorite things about it too is he is taking care of the man that killed everyone he ever loved.
Yeah. I mean, Professor X. Accidentally, he's got dementia.
Yeah, and
so
seizures.
His psychic powers are going crazy, and he accidentally killed all of the X-Men.
All of them, everyone yeah. in the school for the gifted.
And he kills a lot of people around him accidentally, but Wolverine doesn't because he's got the healing factor.
Yeah.
Oh,
and so he has to take care of that man, and then you see too that Professor X Xavier thinks that Wolverine killed everybody.
Yeah.
And like yells at him. He's like, I know what you did. Like all this stuff. So he has to take care of the man that killed all everyone he loved and then get berated by him and still somehow show him love yeah. and respect. And it's
so tragic.
It is so tragic. But when you talk about superhero movies, what's her name?
His daughter, his clone.
His clone, essentially. Yeah. I forgot what her designation number is. X something. She's a badass in the movie.
Yeah.
Kills a bunch of
little
people.
Girl.
Yeah. yeah.
Who's got Wolverine powers.
Wolverine. Yeah. She has two claws in each hand and then one claw in each foot. Laura is they could just call her Laura. I can't remember her X designation.
Yeah.
But
and she's from the comic books.
Yeah. She's from the comic books. And then that final scene though in the forest where Hugh Jackman, where Logan pumps himself with the steroids for mutants.
That would make him act like he used to be.
And he just goes on a rampage.
That's another thing. I mean, this movie is really about like aging and getting yeah. old and dying too. It's a lot of things that are like, oh, this is beautiful and horrific. And the scene in Las Vegas
yeah.
where Professor X had a seizure and he froze everyone around him.
Mm-hmm.
And the only one who could like get through it without dying was Wolverine just because yep. he kept healing, but he was like dying and healing.
And then even they on the journey, they stop by, like they help the farmers out and they end up having dinner with them. And there's this moment of brevity and they're laughing and they're sharing a meal around a dinner table.
Yeah.
They're experiencing love and life again because what Logan and Professor X were doing beforehand was not, they were existing. They yeah. were surviving. They weren't living.
Yeah.
And so they finally had it. And then just that ends so horrifically
His
for everybody.
Superhero life enters into this harmony and just blows it all up.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great movie. It's beautifully another just gut-wrenching movie.
Yeah.
You want to feel feelings.
Oh, my gosh. Oh. But if you wanted to ask me, like, a more traditional superhero movie,
yeah,
it's Spider-Man 2.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's great.
It's Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2.
Doc Ock.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, oh.
Funny enough, I would also Spider-Verse, Into the Spider-Verse, the first one.
That was almost some of this Into the Spider-Verse because it was so fresh and fun. Oh, that was going to be – I was thinking that one, too. That's another one. A lot of good superhero movies.
Well, Brando, I have one last question we have to answer.
Oh, yeah?
We went through all the genres together, but there is one final question.
Yeah?
If you could only watch one movie
yeah.
for the rest of your life, what movie would that be?
Oh. I have an answer, but you know what? I have an answer.
Hit me with it.
It's Lord of the Rings.
I had a feeling it was going to be that.
It's just so perfect.
It would be Fellowship?
It would be Lord of the Rings, yeah.
Fellowship.
The Lord of the Rings.
Fellowship of the Ring?
The 12-hour, three-chapter
no,
movie.
No, not one movie.
Yeah, honestly, if it was just one, I think it probably would be Fellowship. Yeah.
That's a great
answer. It's just so good, and it's it's like poetry. It's like, it's like you're watching a masterpiece. It's a written masterpiece that they somehow formed into a movie masterpiece, and every single thing is so utterly perfect.
Yeah.
It's just, it's the peak of art and expression. It's the best that humanity has ever made. We went to the moon and we made Lord of the Rings. And that is our best accomplishments, you know? God.
You're terrible and I love you.
What would it be for you?
So I went back and forth on a lot of this. So everybody knows I'm a huge Quentin Tarantino fan. I almost put Pulp Fiction or Kill Bill, Volume 1.
Yes.
Okay. Nope. I contemplated hard about those two.
Kill Bill Volume 1 is my favorite Tarantino movie.
You're not wrong.
Yeah.
But also Pulp Fiction is my favorite as well. But it's
you could have put that in the action genre.
Yeah, you could put that in the crime. You could put that in the Western. Like, like it is insane. But there's one movie that I know for a fact is my favorite movie of all time.
Yeah.
And it is not Count of Monte Cristo. That was close in adventure.
That's a great one, though.
It's a great one, too.
Paddington 2.
Paddington 2. no, it is Chef.
Yes.
Taking it back to the first episode.
Old school. That's a good one.
So,
Jon Favreau.
Jon Favreau, he's a chef in it, and he's down and out trying to reconnect with his son, ex-wife, and starts a food truck. And by doing that and driving across the United States, he's able to reconnect with his son. And it is just, I can watch that movie every day.
It's so good. It's so feel good, too.
It is so feel good. It makes you want to pursue your passions.
Yeah.
Like, I talked a lot about
it. Makes you want to start a podcast.
It makes you want to start a podcast. I'll peel back the veil a little bit. So when we first started the Helios Network, I was working for a marketing company that was hired by Diageo. So I was working for a marketing company called Enthuse that I was running the Dickel and Blade and Bow portfolio for.
Yeah.
And it was a dead-end job. Great job. Made a lot of money. Don't get me wrong.
And you're good at it.
Thank you. Appreciate that. There's no creativity. There's no freedom. I felt like I was put into a box, and I couldn't do anything that would make me successful. They wanted me to be a little cookie cutter build, little cookie cutter mold.
Yeah.
And that's it. And they just wanted yes men, and I am not a yes man.
Yeah.
Great movie, Yes Man, by the way, too. That was almost in there for the comedies. And Chef, there's a scene in it when he talks about being stuck in a rut. The restaurant is successful.
Yeah, he's in a super successful restaurant. Yeah.
The restaurant, but he's been making the exact same dishes over and over again. And he's
just doing what he's told. And everything he suggests, he's ignored.
Ignored.
Yeah.
And he's talking to the owner about this and venting his frustration to the owner. And the owner goes, too bad. It's my restaurant. And that was basically how I felt working for that company, as I was trying to give all these great ideas. Yeah. And every single one was like, no, that's not your job. And so whenever I watch that movie, so eventually like he gets fired / quits. And it just fills me with so much fervor every single time I watch it to just be like, yeah, double middle fingers, deuces, goodbye, everybody. Yeah. Like I'm going to go do something on my own and pursue my own passions. And honestly, that movie really helped me want to start the Helios Network with you, Brando, and that's why I chose it.
I just love it because I feel like we need creative expressions in life. I think everybody does.
Yeah.
I think whether it's writing in a journal or writing poetry or you know, taking pictures and photography or, you know, painting or sketching or whatever that is, I think we all need, I think every single human being is like designed with some sort of artistic expression as just part of us.
Yes.
Not that everyone's going to be a professional artist or even that everyone's going to be good at it. Just like we all like singing or music or whatever it is. Like everyone just, we all need that.
Yes.
And you know, sometimes you just got to do that. Like we sit down for 2 years, 2.5 years, say, let's going to do a podcast thing and we're going to empower other people and we're going to help and we're writing things. And this was such a huge creative endeavor. And I love it. I love that we did this.
Yeah, me too. It's hard, you know, shutting this down. I've had a lot of emotions.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Oh, for sure.
When we announced it on our Slack channel, I was feeling good. Like I was like, hey, I'm ready for this. Like, right. Like it's time.
Yeah.
And then when you sent like that, thing that we talked about, you know, like, hey guys, like it's, we're bringing
that
this
was,
to a close.
That was the announcement.
That was the announcement of closing down the Helios network. I was in my truck about to walk into an account and I had to stop and like sit there for like 15 minutes and just like breathe and come to a moment of closure. Cause this is our baby.
Yeah.
This is our baby.
Yeah.
And
it's something we've done. It's been a regular part of our lives.
Yeah.
And it's not just us doing banter and such. It's like a regular rhythm. I always know I'm going to sit down with Owen and I'm going to talk. And I love hanging out with you. And this is like our time together. This is our special time. And I've always had that in my life. Yeah. But then it's multiplied because it's so many others that have been involved too.
Yeah.
Not just the guests of our show, but the other shows.
All the other shows.
And it's like, I value that so much. And it's so funny because, you know, we had to have that talk with you. I was like, hey, we still got to be friends, right? We can't go our separate ways because, like, the friendships that's come out of this is, like, so important to me. And
it is for me, too. And it was hard, you know. It's a part of it is feeling like, you know, we're letting everybody down, continuing this and whatnot. But, you know, so there's a lot of those type of fears
emotions. Letting us down. Because they should have.
Nope. We're not going there. We're not going there.
You have money. This is where I get real bitter. Yeah. I'm just joking. Anyone listening to this, I don't feel any bitterness towards it because it's like, oh, we tried to monetize, we didn't grow with it. It's like, man, that happens sometimes. That's fine. Yeah. When you try something, it doesn't always go the way you want, but that's okay. There's other value than just it becoming a job. You know, it's so much.
And that's
more
what I was saying at the beginning.
It.
Like, this isn't a failure. I'll never see this as a failure. Like, this is amazing. So you and I can now put business owners on our resumes and talk about like what we did and stuff like that. Like, you know, a lot of people were like, hey, like you're shutting it down. But I was like, yeah, it's more than just a studio, right? Like the time and effort that, you know, both you and I put in behind the scenes and editing and all this stuff. I'm like, there's a lot that went into this. And it's scary to have free time again in my life. And not having like sit here with a calendar and schedule a bunch of things out for a bunch of different podcasts and whatnot. Like it's scary for sure. But who knows? Maybe a few years from now there might be a revival.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
If we miss it enough.
Maybe we'll go crazy.
Yeah.
And we're like, what the hell did we do?
Yeah.
Get it back going. We'll be back on our phones. It'll sound terrible.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, with that said, all of the podcasts are going to remain up forever. So it's not like we're deleting the content online. You'll always be able to listen to all your favorite Helios Network shows on all your favorite podcast streaming apps.
Yeah, and I hope, you know, for anyone listening, man, I hope you got some enjoyment. I hope you got some maybe inspirations or some fun, just some lightness, just a little bit of love and light in your life. And hey, man, if we did that, then heck yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and if there's anything that you can learn from Brando and I is if you have a passion and you think it can just – I always say this, just because it's a passion doesn't mean you need to monetize it, right? But if you have a passion and you are contemplating if you should go for it, you know, make it your full-time career, whatever it is, I say go for it, man.
Yeah.
You only live once.
We have this one precious life and it is so like short. so precious short time in this universe. Man, just do something beautiful and do something good and do something uplifting. And even if you're doing something uplifting and it fails, at least you did something uplifting.
100%.
You know what I mean? At least you added to humanity.
You can put your stamp on it and be like, hey, I tried my hardest at this.
And that's all we can do.
Yeah.
And that's cool.
There's a great quote from Yellowstone that I want to end on.
Nice.
And it's in topic with this is Rip says it. He goes, there's two roads in life. One road is either you're winning or learning, and the other road is you're failing.
Nice.
And so that's two different things. You can win or learn on the same road, right? And so he's basically saying you're either winning or you're not winning, but you're learning from your failures, or you just see them as failures, and that's the other road.
Yeah.
And it's something that I truly believe in. So.
Well, this is it, man.
Yeah.
This is it. We're going to do our final closing.
Yeah.
I love you all so much, and thanks so much for listening to this week's episode, to any episode of Banter and Such. There is no next week.
There is no next week.
Well, I'm Brando.
And I'm Owen.
And from now on, may your life be filled with BS. Did our last episode of Banter and Such.